Thank you.
Go ahead, ma'am. Good evening and welcome. I'd like to call to order the study session of January 17th, 2017. Councilmember Marchione is participating by speakerphone tonight, so if we could just go around to the table and identify ourselves for the record, please.
Jay Arnold.
John Pascal.
Kurt Triplett.
Kathy Brown.
Joel Funt.
Paul Stewart.
Toby Nixon.
Dave Asher.
Penny Sweet.
And Amy Wallen. Thank you very much. City Manager.
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So tonight's study session is about the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center and the 6th Street Corridor Project. You might recall you recently passed legislation to have the Planning Commission make a recommendation to the council on these topics by April 30th. So that's going to be coming to you as a formal recommendation of the Planning Commission later on. And what we wanted to do today, though, was just provide everyone with background and update. So what we're looking for is council to let us know if you have thoughts or comments or suggestions based on what you hear that we can then take to the Planning Commission over time. But there will be a formal recommendation coming back to you by the end of April. So with that, I might kick it off to you. Okay.
So, Mr. Stewart. Over to Angela.
Good evening. So tonight, I'm going to give you a little bit of project background, and then Jeff Arango's here. Oh, sorry. Can you hear this? Am I on?
You are on.
But I don't know if that goes to that, right?
Probably not.
Right, maybe she could sit at the table. How about Angela? Is that all right?
That's okay. That should work. We can trade off.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's do a next slide, please.
Oh, I knew that was one. Yes. Can you hear me now?
Doreen?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Okay. So I was saying I'm going to give a little bit of the project background, and then Jeff Arango is here from Burke Consulting to talk to you about the design options that we've come up with and also the redevelopment continuum. Jeannie Acutanza is here from Transpo to talk about the 6th Street Corridor, an overview, project status of what we've done with that. And then if we have time, we'll talk about the schedule and, of course, questions and answers. So I wanted to go back and remind you why we're doing this. We passed a new Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan in 2011. And so that we updated the comprehensive plan, but we didn't do the zoning at that time. And so I put up a couple of key policies from that plan, which is still in place. The first one talks about coordinating with the Everest neighborhood to develop a plan for the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center. So that was very important to the Houghton Community Council and the Planning Commission that the two neighborhoods work together because the neighborhood center is in both neighborhoods. And then the other policy, which is important to look at, it talks about stepping building heights up to 5 stories. So at this point, we have a zoning code that says 30 feet maximum in that area, and we've got a comprehensive plan that says at least on the south side up to 5 stories, and they don't match, and we need to make them match. So that's one of the main reasons for doing this. At the same time, the Public Works Department wanted to do a transportation study of the 6th Street corridor. And so it made sense to be doing both these projects together because the 6th Street corridor has a big impact on the neighborhood center. So that's why we're moving ahead with this right now. Yes?
You said that the zoning code has a provision for 30 feet height limit.
That's correct.
Is that both in the Everest neighborhood and in the Houghton neighborhood?
Yes, in the BC zone, which is in both neighborhoods. That's correct.
Okay. But the comprehensive plan for the Everest neighborhood allows 35
feet. So that's also an inconsistency. The BC zoning used to allow for greater height if there were additional setbacks, but that has since been changed. So there's actually an inconsistency on both sides of the street.
But still, 35 feet is allowed by the comp plan in the Everest side of commercial area. There.
That's correct.
And
yes.
Zoned?
No, it's not zoned.
Okay, and then I was just going to remind you we've done a lot of public outreach on this, which is part of the reason that we asked for the extension a couple weeks ago. And I, in your packet, I gave you the link to the page so that you could look at the results of the online survey. We've had neighborhood meetings, a community workshop, tried to get the word out, and we have heard from a lot of people. And I would say biggest concern, I'm sure you've seen it and heard it too, is traffic. But also there's concern about density and community character. So that's just my brief introduction. Now Jeff's going to go into more detail about the design options.
So you'll want to come down here. Okay.
Sure. Wait, we took her here?
Yeah.
Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, thank you. Good evening. Thanks for having me here. I'm going to walk through a little update about where we're at in the project and some of the design options that we presented to the Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council at their last meeting. So I'll start with what we're calling the development continuum, and this lays out the three different scenarios or alternatives, if you will, that we're looking at. So over on the left-hand side is the preservation scenario. That would basically be keeping the existing zoning and development standards that are in place now. That limits building height to 30 feet, which is about two stories. we think that this scenario would likely result in the least amount of change, since it's maintaining current policies, likely to maintain surface parking, wouldn't have the ability to support structured parking, and would likely maintain the existing development pattern. And part of the reasoning for that is that those standards have been in place for a number of years, and really there has not been a whole lot of development happening in that area. There has been some investment in retrofit, but the last new building that was developed was in 2000, and I believe prior to that it was 1990. So the second scenario in the middle is called modest change. That would allow just an extra 5 feet in height, which would allow up to three stories. That could be done in concert with some other transportation and circulation improvements. Again, likely to maintain surface parking. The ability to support structured parking doesn't really occur until you get to the greater change and amenities scenario. Would likely provide a little bit more incentive for perhaps a minor infill, and could also include some public realm improvements to streets and perhaps public spaces as well. So that's the modest change scenario. And then the scenario all the way to the right is the greater change and amenities scenario. That would allow the building heights up to about 55 feet. This would require, in order to support that level of development, improvements to streets and public spaces. Right now, the development pattern is very auto-oriented. There's a lot of potential vehicle and pedestrian conflicts. There's 22 curb cuts just in that little neighborhood center. It's not a very safe or inviting place to walk around. Really would not support the type of development that's called for in the Central Houghton plan. Would support structured parking. Would likely result in more redevelopment and new development, and would require the greatest level of improvements to the public realm in order to make that work. So if you just simply started redeveloping and you had the infrastructure and streets that were in place today, that would not work particularly well. So those are generally the three scenarios, and we've done some analysis of development feasibility and economics for each of these scenarios that I'll walk through in a minute. But the way that we're describing this is that the greater change in amenities would likely result in the most redevelopment and change in the neighborhood center.
I've got a question for you, Jeff.
Sure.
So you characterize one of the scenarios in the continuum as a preservation scenario, and I'm wondering if this is really captures everything in your report, because while it does say it preserves the existing zoning, it doesn't mean there's going to be no change under that scenario, because you talk about, given the age of the buildings being 40 years old, approaching their useful mm-hmm. life, and the lack of potential for redevelopment, mm-hmm. meaning that there could be decline of properties and increased vacancies in the neighborhood.
Potentially.
Which yeah. could mean that stores and services are not available that exist today.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is definitely some risk of decline, and you certainly see it in lots of other communities that have this type of development. I think what's supporting it is that Kirkland's such a strong market, and there's such a demand for retail space, and they're maintaining rents that you do see, you know, the storefronts fall, and you see high-quality businesses in that location. But what we've heard from property owners, and I think is consistent with our analysis, is just there won't tend to be as much incentive for those property owners to invest So there is some risk of decline over time.
Mr. Pascal.
Thank you. So I watched your presentation to the Planning Commission and Community Council. It was good. Very thoughtful discussion. One of the comments that I heard from one of the members was about this graphic, which mm-hmm. is really helpful in understanding kind of the differences in the options that we're, you know, we're kind of considering essentially. And one of the comments was, you know, one of the things that would be nice here is understand the impacts associated with each of the different options. Are you still planning on doing that? Because I think that would be really helpful to understand the impacts then that come along with these.
Sure. We have a slide in a couple of slides that has some of that, and then we've produced a larger sheet, a couple sheets that have those spelled out in more detail.
Okay. So, yes, great. Thank you.
Question for Mr. Asher.
Yes. Thank you. You said that it takes the greater change, the scenario number three, if you will, to meet the comprehensive plan goals.
Well, I was just referring to the fact that in the Central Houghton plan, it talks about transitioning to a more pedestrian-oriented environment and supporting more intense development. Okay. So, you know, if that was the desire of the community, then the greater change in amenities scenario would reflect that.
How about the Everest neighborhood goals?
Those are not as explicit, I believe, in terms of supporting the greater change scenario.
I might add at this time, that's part of the discussion of what to do with the Everest neighborhood for that particular area. We'll come up with language depending on which alternative scenario we land upon to support that. So.
Right, and that's part of my concern here is we're in the midst of an analysis mm-hmm. and about to go to a conclusion, and we haven't, we're relying almost exclusively on the Houghton neighborhood goals, not the Everest, what Everest neighborhood wants. And the Houghton neighborhood has had a bite of the apple most recently, and they've had an opportunity to articulate a number of their goals. But we, in your analysis, I don't see any analysis basing it on the Everest neighborhood plan. I see your analysis being on the Houghton neighborhood plan.
Well, we did use the Houghton plan to develop one of the scenarios, but I'd say that we have three scenarios, and likely the Houghton's goals would fall within one of those three scenarios.
How about Everest?
Everest. My apologies.
Okay.
So why don't we go through the three scenarios, and then we'll...
Thanks.
Great, good questions. So one of the other pieces of our analysis, again, is looking at the feasibility and likelihood of redevelopment. I think it's important to note that people do and entities do development for different reasons with different assumptions and different goals. So it's difficult for us to say no one will ever develop under this scenario or under this scenario you'll definitely see this type of development. You can't really describe it in those terms. So we're generally looking at, you know, what's more likely or less likely to happen. And one of the ways we do that is looking at what's called residual land value. So it's just comparing how much it costs to do a development versus what the value of it is. And if it costs more than it's worth, someone's not going to develop that, right? And the difference between that is what's called residual land value. It's how much you could pay for the land and support that development. So this is looking at some scenarios on the PCC property. And over on the left-hand side, you have the modest change scenario where we looked at options of 3, 4, and 5-story development. And each scenario had one version with a large retail store on the first floor, like a grocery store. And the other had a smaller retail store or stores with some structured parking located on the first floor of the building. And what I'd ask you to do here is focus less on the precision of the numbers and more on the story that it's telling, which is as you increase zoning, you're essentially increasing the value of the land. You're increasing the incentive for redevelopment. And I'd say in this case, because the existing developments are so successful, you know, some of those property owners have owned those properties for quite some time. They're doing well financially. There would have to be a bigger incentive for them to want to redevelop. So as you go from the 3-story to the 5-story, Basically, you're creating value for the community, also for, of course, the property and business owners, but also for the community potentially. So if there is a desire for, again, better sidewalks, better pedestrian connections, higher quality development, this would be one way that you would do that. In contrast, sometimes you see communities wanting more intense development, so they go and rezone to something that is not realistic, right? You couldn't develop that and actually pay for it, and that creates further stagnation. I'd say for Kirkland, if you did want to do the upzoning, there's a good likelihood that you would see development in a relatively short time period, just from the analysis that we've done, but also from our conversations with property owners.
Particularly on the north side.
Yeah, particularly on the north side. Any questions?
Yes, sir. Yep.
So you talked about value to the community.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was an interesting graph. There's a table that goes along with it that actually shows, you know, the numbers behind it, mm-hmm. and what's envisioned in terms of the amount of retail and,
yep.
and residential units. And I've kind of been thinking about this, that one of the values to the community is improved retail environment, you know, greater kind of services to both Houghton and Everest and the people around. But under, like, the five-story small retail, for example, the amount of retail that under that scenario would be almost half as much as what's there today.
Mm-hmm.
Today is 29,000 square feet. Under that scenario, that's 13,000 square feet. So the value in that instance is really about the residential that's being built. So that's something just to keep in mind, you
yep.
know, as we look at these,
yeah.
is really what the goal is a goal to build and provide more residential,
yep.
or is it also to provide greater retail and
yeah.
service amenities to the neighborhood that creates that walking and environment where people want to go? And
yeah, that's you raised a really good point. So one of the things the community could do is maintain a certain minimum first floor retail requirement, so you didn't have the situation where a large portion of the first floor was used for parking. So there are some further options the city could do to get what they want. I'd also say that the larger format retail perform just as well. So it's in some cases when the retail isn't as attractive, you'd be more likely to get that large parking on the first floor to make the economics work. So this slide has, again, some of the goals and policies from the Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan, and the title is Community Values with a Question Mark. And I would say that, you know, in this case, our scenarios do really reflect quite different community values. Not that one is right or one is wrong, but you know, the preservation scenario is quite different than what's called for here in the Central Houghton Plan. I think that's why there is a little bit of a disconnect perhaps between the plan and what we're hearing from some folks in the community. But if the community's values are, or goals are, really what is reflected here, then I think the, you know, the five-story scenario is the one that's going to produce or have the most likelihood of producing the change that the community wants. Understanding that there's many people in the community we've heard from that would rather not have any change there. So I think that's where it's been a little bit challenging, is, again, the scenarios reflect very different goals and values for the community, which is, I think, different than how a lot of planning processes unfold. So your question about the impacts, or what we're calling here the scenario outcomes, again, it's difficult to describe these in absolute terms, but these are generally what we think of some of the likely outcomes are from the different scenarios. So preservation on the left, I won't read them all, but, you know, you're generally going to keep the same development pattern, generally going to maintain the sort of auto-oriented design, the surface parking lots. I think there is some risk of declining retail over time. You know, under the existing conditions, the prioritization of transportation is really the movement of vehicles through the area. It's maybe not as much about pedestrians and bikes and local access. It is, I think, a pretty unsafe pedestrian environment, at least that was my sense when I was walking around. And you would maintain the lower scale buildings. Modest change, I think, would largely maintain the existing development pattern. I think there'd be a little bit more of an incentive for some infill. There could be minor improvements to streets and public spaces, but maybe this level of development wouldn't support the largest investments in those streets and public spaces. Likely to maintain the surface parking lots, still prioritizing the movement of vehicles through the neighborhood, and so on and so forth. The greater change in amenities, I think, would allow an opportunity to create more of the pedestrian-oriented design that's called for in the Central Houghton Plan. There would likely be more retail amenities through redevelopment. buildings would be developed with a better relationship to the street. It would be a better place to walk. It could support perhaps a park once model. So we've been talking about concepts to add perhaps some public street parking, because right now there is no street parking. So it's really not convenient to go from property to property. You really have to drive or, you know, try to cross the street. So supporting improved streets and public spaces, redevelopment gives you opportunity to redo and improve infrastructure, green design, and stormwater improvements. Right now, there's not design review required in the neighborhood center, so having design review requirements and design guidelines like the city has in its other pedestrian-oriented districts provides support for greater housing choices, would likely result in the reduction of surface parking, which is one thing we heard from the public. I think even those resistant to larger scale change did strongly support, you know, reduction in surface parking. And it could help support, you know, fiscal sustainability. Higher density development has generally, you know, less fiscal impacts to the city in terms of providing services. So, again, depending on what the community values are, you know, those are what we see as some of the more likely outcomes.
Yes, Mr. Usher.
A question on the difference between unsafe pedestrian environment, which you have in the first two scenarios, and the safer pedestrian environment. What are the things that you get from two to three that create that, and is that doable under a modest change scenario? You just don't think it's...
I think it's doable, but I think it would be more reliant on the city to do it. Okay. And I think it would you know, to make an investment in, say, 12-foot wide sidewalks, but there's a curb cut every, you know, so many feet, and there's a surface parking lot next to you, it would, you know, that level of investment with that type of land use that's there now is not really that necessarily compatible.
Okay.
So I just, the city could go out and improve sidewalks and make it safer. It just, to me, seems less likely that would warrant that level of investment, but certainly could happen.
But sidewalk width is pretty much the key factor
One of the key factors, that and some sort of buffer, either landscaped or parked cars, on-street parking between the vehicular travel lanes. So, again,
and
I don't want to say it couldn't happen.
And the curb cuts, access points.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, so this is just a diagram to kind of illustrate a couple of the points that I had made earlier. So again, through upzoning to either the modest or greater change amenities, you're again creating value for property owners, business owners, and the community. Supporting fiscal sustainability, there's a variety of ways that the community extracts that value. So it's, you know, permit fees, impact fees, taxes, those sorts of things. And those all create and also developer funded improvements are all become more possible through creating that increased property value. And then you combine that with the community values. So what does the community want to get out of this? And that's reflected in the neighborhood plans, like the Central Houghton and Everest plans. It's reflected in the zoning and the design guidelines and the development standards that guide how the development looks and how it functions. If community value is pedestrian-oriented design, that increased value could be used to support the transition to a safer pedestrian environment. And if a healthy community is one of the community values, again, it provides opportunity because there's change and investment happening in the neighborhood. So again, a lot of it comes down to what the community wants the desired outcomes to be. And then over on the right, we have what some of those desired outcomes could be: more retail amenities, expanded and improved public spaces, reduction in surface parking, better pedestrian and bike infrastructure, more housing choices, retaining existing retail, that could be a desired community outcome, transportation improvements, and green design or green development. Any questions on that slide? Okay, I mentioned earlier, I won't go into too much detail about this, but as I mentioned earlier, the city's design guidelines and development review process don't apply to the neighborhood center right now. And Kirkland has a great set of design guidelines in place that guide development in these neighborhood centers. They just simply don't apply here. That includes both standards that apply to all of those districts as well as specific standards developed that pertain only to specific districts. So those could be developed for the Houghton Center. It addresses a variety of design issues from sidewalks, building frontages, architecture, plazas, public spaces, public art, you know, all the great things that the community has deemed important. So those could absolutely apply to the neighborhood center and would really be critical, particularly if the community chooses the greater modest or particularly the greater change scenario. One of the concepts that's in the design guidelines, and there are a lot of different requirements, this is just simply one that came up in the public process, the issue of upper story setbacks. So both of those images, the graphic and the image on the right, appear in the design guidelines document, and it just shows an example of how upper stories can be set back from the street, which can make the building, particularly for the pedestrian, appear much smaller or less tall and bulky than it actually is. So upper level setbacks could be applied to the neighborhood center, allows more light and air and less sort of canyon effect on the public streets.
Question here.
Yeah.
This diagram uses the term step back. In the packet, you have the term setback. Do we have a definable, enforceable term for step back now?
To some degree, yes. But we could be more clear on that with any new design guidelines. So, and it depends on how you want to structure the envelope. That's the key, I think. And then whatever tool you use, we can come up with.
Because we're using it in the comp right. plan, step backs.
Yes.
And I looked at this and I said, why aren't we
right.
using step back here? Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Okay, so now walk through the different some further design options for each of the or the two modest change and greater change scenarios. So this is a map of the neighborhood center, and I'll just walk through a couple of these concepts. So one of the things you'll notice about the neighborhood center, the property properties are very deep, and there's really only the 68th and 6108 connections, so there's not great circulation and connectivity within the district. So one of the things we've talked about is on the north side, you see that white arrow, adding a connection, east-west connection along the north side of the property. It would allow direct connection to the CKC. It would allow better circulation between properties, could support potentially parking, bicycle and pedestrian access. And then the other concept you'll see in the middle with the white arrow is a new north-south connection that would connect the north and south sides of 68th Street. It would create more street frontage for those large parcels for redevelopment and create improved circulation within the district. It's a little hard to see, at least on the big screen, but on the left-hand side along the CKC, there's a purple area there, and that's to indicate the need for a setback, which I term as a setback from, say, the property line, to minimize any shadow effects on the CKC. And also there could be design standards or design guidelines that require when those properties are redeveloped to orient towards the trail, so maybe have direct access. Have businesses that would be attracted to the trail, whether it's a bike shop or a brew pub like is already out there with signage along the trail. So having some orientation towards the trail, I think, would be a really pretty cool feature, and that's a great amenity. Along the south side, similarly, you have lower density residential development, so requiring a buffer to minimize impacts on those residential areas would be, I think, really important. And then that could also support another east-west circulation connection, potentially. The area in yellow, those are the developable areas of those parcels within the neighborhood center. And under the modest change scenario, they would be limited to the 35 feet in height, so an increase in 5 feet over what's allowed today. And then the concept that we've been looking at for greater change would allow the 55-foot height limit through an incentive or bonus program, so only if it met certain criteria, and only in the area that's in blue. One of the things we've heard from the public is a concern around the canyon effect along the major arterials, and so this would require a 30 to maybe 50-foot zone, which you see in yellow there along 68th and 108th, where the 35-foot base height would be the limit in that zone. So it's a little bit of a hybrid between modest change and greater change, but trying to respond to a lot of the comments and concerns we've heard from the public. Any questions or comments on that? So this is a view of 68th Street right now, looking west towards the lake, and you can see the sidewalks are pretty narrow. You can see the curb cut there to the Starbucks on the left, and you can see a series of other curb cuts. So you can, you know, it just doesn't give you a great feeling of safety as a pedestrian. Most of the space is allocated for vehicles. There is the bike lane, which is nice, but for a pedestrian, not so great. There's no on-street parking to buffer the pedestrian, so it's pretty much mostly an auto corridor. We looked at a couple of concepts for adding on-street parking. The existing right-of-way right now is 60 feet wide, which is not particularly wide for a street of that character. But in a 60-foot right-of-way, just to give you a sense of what could be provided in that, you could increase the sidewalks to 11 feet. You could add parallel parking on one side, 8 feet, and two 11-foot travel lanes. This would result in a reduction of that middle turn lane, and it would essentially prioritize more local access than vehicle movement. This hasn't necessarily been tested from a transportation standpoint, but it's just to illustrate how that might work. And there are a number of other concepts that they've been working on in the corridor study, working with the existing right-of-way, but also what it might look like to increase the right-of-way to more like 80 feet, and I'll show you that in a minute. The other piece of the section here, so I mentioned that 30 to 50-foot zone along 68th and 6108, where the 35-foot height limit would be in effect. And so this is a section looking down 68th Street that first 30 to 50 feet, you can only build 35 feet, and then the bonus provisions would kick in beyond that point. So if you're a pedestrian along 68th, you'd only really see the three-story buildings. And under this concept, you would increase the amount of the public right-of-way, the 60 feet allocated to pedestrians, from 16% of the right-of-way to 33%. So it would be essentially a doubling of the amount of space for pedestrians. And this really would only work if there was a reduction in curb cuts, so there was some consolidation of access to those properties. Otherwise, it would maintain too many pedestrian and vehicle conflicts. And then there is the bonus 55-foot height. Option B, this was looking at an 80-foot right-of-way with angled parking, so you get more parking. Under this scenario, you could have, I think it was 110 parking spaces. Angled parking, is not as great for vehicle movement, so it may not work, but there are some other concepts that they're working on for the transportation corridor study that have cycle track, parallel parking, maintain the 3-foot, three travel lanes, and the wider sidewalks. So there's many different concepts that you could look at for how this right-of-way could support better pedestrian and bicycle safety.
Question for you, Jeff, from Mr. Nixon.
So did you look at any options that have dedicated bus lanes or something to get transit moving?
I did not. They may have in the corridor study, but I have not.
So as part of the 6th Street corridor study, we did look at that. primarily on 108th and 6th Street because that's the route of the 255, which is the major bus through this area. But we'll talk about that in the corridor study. So.
Okay, great.
Okay. Oh, sorry, it's got the same animation. So I duplicated the slide. Okay, this is just an example of Queen Anne Avenue in Upper Queen Anne, just kind of an example of, you know, what a street would look like and function like with a mix of on-street parking, two travel lanes, and five-story development. So that's just kind of a precedent example from Queen Anne. Mm-hmm. And that's with back angle parking. But this is not, you know, this is not a major arterial. It's really just for the local neighborhood traffic. So it's a little bit different in that respect. Another example, this is from the PCC in Fremont. And the PCC in the back there is a six-story building. But what's interesting is that the Starbucks, the three-story building where the Starbucks is actually part of that same development. So it's all built on the same podium with underground parking. And that building is about 35 feet in height for a depth of about 30 to 40 feet. So it is an example of a development where you do have a lower building height along one street frontage and taller buildings in the rear. So something like this concept might speaks to the diagram I showed earlier with the taller heights further back from the arterial.
We've got some downtown here.
Yeah, you do have some good examples downtown for sure. So just a quick summary. I think I touched on most of these, but design options. So again, the biggest concept is I think is allowing the 55-foot height only in certain parts of the neighborhood center and only if certain bonus provisions are met. So some of those could be only if there's a first floor grocery store. So I think maintaining grocery store in the neighborhood is important to the community. Providing public or shared parking perhaps could be one of the incentives, considering there's no shared or public parking out there today. Requirements to expand or improve public spaces, so that could be the street or providing public plazas as part of the redevelopment, and other amenities that are identified by the community. Limit that building height to three stories along the major arterials. Improve 68th Street with wider sidewalks and potentially on-street parking. Encourage development to orient to the CKC, look to expand and improve the local circulation system within the neighborhood center, and require the setback and landscape buffer from the CKC to minimize shadow and other impacts. So that's my presentation, and be happy to answer any other questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank
questions?
You.
Mr. Roger.
Yeah. Who were the discussions that you had with in the Everest neighborhood on the north side of 68?
For the property owners or just people in general?
Well, just who? And I guess you talked to the property owners.
We had a number of survey responses, and we had a number of folks attend our public open house workshop, but I couldn't tell you names specifically.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Other questions or comments, Jeff? I have a comment. It's a very good presentation.
Thank you.
And I have to tell you, this is my neighborhood. I live right there. And I go through there every day, and I agree with a lot of the observations that you've made about it isn't very pedestrian-friendly, and it is kind of on the old-school model of surface parking lots, et cetera. And I love some of the beautiful ideas that you presented. But I'm kind of going through this shift in my thought process a little bit because I know we always have to think about the property owners, right? I think that every property owner deserves to have the government look at their zoning and adjust it and take a look at what changes would be fit in with the community character and serve the neighborhood and think about neighborhood impacts. And the big thing, I think, is not changing the surface to making the parking underneath and allowing more density. To me, at least, it's very difficult to get around. And so I'm really interested to see what the transportation study says. And then, you know, this is the whole city goes to Metro Market and PCC. That's a place where we do a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but this is the thing that I wonder about, is that development should be along transit corridors. And that's a transit corridor that just doesn't work very well. And I, in my mind, and I hate to sort of go back to it again, but I thought that Sound Transit would be on the CKC, and that someday we would, you know, we would be planning for some sort of really efficient, effective transit, and that's the one market commercial center on the CKC. So it's a huge something we really need to think about and plan for carefully in the future. And with this, and it is still a bike lane, and it is still a trail, and it is still a transit corridor of some kind, but it's not going to move as nearly as many people as it was. So I don't know, I just wanted to share that's what kind of I'm thinking about, and I wondered if that was something that came up in your community meetings at all.
Yeah, it did. I think I remember someone in my group in the workshop saying pretty much that, you know.
We still want to be smart growth, and we want beautiful neighborhood centers and that serve the neighborhoods and are the best that they can be. So
sure.
It's just an interesting problem that we have to solve. And you can tell it's a very important asset in our city. We care about it a lot.
Very much.
So anyway, that's it for me. Others?
We have,
go ahead, Paul.
We have Jeannie Acutanza here to talk about transportation options and some of the improvements being discussed. So
I'm wondering about, I made an error, I believe, that we're going into a closed session to discuss quasi-judicial matter, and I did not bring that up at the beginning of the meeting. How serious of an error have I made?
No, you're
okay?
Fine.
I thought you
you're
had
fine.
To say it just before you go. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Are we doing okay for time, Jeannie?
I'm going to cover this very quickly, but I definitely want to answer all your questions.
You want to sit down here, too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stay.
Yeah. No, she's going to sit here.
Okay, good.
Great. Thank you, Council. I'm, again, Jeannie Acutanza from Transpo. And you mentioned a lot about transportation, so I think this is a perfect opportunity to talk about how transportation marries in with this study. I think it's really been great that we've been doing it together. So I'm going to just take you through part of our the background of how we conducted the study, and then talk about where we are as far as some solutions that the Transportation Commission and others have been looking at. So it's been great. It's been an integrated land use and transportation study, as you know, and some of the things that we've been doing, inclusive public outreach, we've done quite a bit of that. You've heard more about that, and working together to create this 6th Street Corridor Plan. And we'll end up with recommendations for zoning that's married in with that. So I want to talk about what we heard, what we've learned, and ideas for what we can do. Right out of the chute, we looked at the comp plan and transportation master plan. Some of the things we heard over and over again through talking to the community and the survey and outreach was congestion during peak times. We heard a lot about parking, mobility, moving people efficiently, and then operations, safely connecting the community. Traffic congestion, it's increased diversion traffic. People were worried about, you know, bypass traffic or people congestion on the freeway that impacts this neighborhood. And how it's part of a regional system, how it impacts the neighborhoods. All travel modes are growing, and I like to throw this out. You hear this at PSRC saying over 185 people are moving here every day to this region, every day. It's amazing. So operations to safely connecting the community. We heard a lot about off-peak, you know, that school peak, walkable communities. We have vehicle circulation. And then specifically in this neighborhood center, conflicts between cars, peds, and bikes. The systems aren't complete, and lots of driveways, and we want to make that safe. Mobility. We talked a lot about mobility, and I think a lot of people in the workshop were really interested in transit, the effectiveness of transit, because the parking ride's full or buses are stuck in congestion, people are stuck behind the buses, and then the bus stop spacing. The bike connections were inconvenient, uncomfortable, not well connected. The South Kirkland Park and Ride as a parking issue is full, fills early, and maybe it's overflowing into the neighborhoods. and it might not be completely all transit-based. And then there was an issue with retail employees. Are they parking in the neighborhoods as well? So we heard a lot about that. The survey talked about a number of issues. We had a really strong survey response, and fixing regional facilities was far and above. You know, that's our answer. Is the magic bullet is, you know, fix 405. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Moving transit was something everybody was concerned about, and improving access. And for that, by access, that's the neighborhoods getting out onto the facilities when 108th 6th is congested. So long queues. We talked about values at the workshop, and this is something these are the values that we're going to use for evaluating solutions. So moving people, not just vehicles, efficiently throughout the entire corridor. I think a lot of people recognize transit is going to be the way we move people. And then connecting the community and neighborhood destinations safely. That's all 24 hours a day. That's, you know, all the kids walking to school, et cetera. And then we want everything to be designed to reduce congestion as much as possible and provide capacity into the future to help city achieve its growth goals. So what we learned, we used a whole host of data. Everybody asked us to not just rely on data that was in hand, but a broad spectrum, and we did do that. These are some of the sources I'd like to point out, INRIX, because that's a Kirkland business. And then we looked at, you know, how have things changed over time. So this is something people were interested in. How has the corridor traffic increased? And it's not that dramatically different. You see a little bit of change with recession. People want to, how much has Google influenced, you know, how 520 tolling, economic recovery. All of those, this corridor is pretty sturdy in carrying traffic. The other thing, we looked at the parallel corridors. 405 does quite a bit of their job on this corridor. 85% of the trips going north-south all day are on 405, and 108th carries, you know, like 5%, and Lake Washington Boulevard, because it's a little wider in the south end, is more like 10%. So those are some things that we, you know, just balancing how traffic gets there. Queuing is a huge thing. I think we all know, seen, lived through that. And I just wanted to point out the 6th Street, that's increased over time. There's 45 to 55 cars, 45 to 55 people, lots of empty seats in those cars. But it's a 1,200-foot queue right now. And the 108th Avenue from south of 68th is over a mile long. And that's 250 cars. You think about how many people that is, and lots of, again, thoughts of empty seats. I looked at operations to safely connect. We talked about too many driveways close together. We talked about collisions and the high rate of ped bike right there in that neighborhood center, because there's a lot of conflict points. What was interesting to us when we looked at collisions by time of day, on 68th Street, that the peak time was middle of the day, lunchtime. Interesting, right? And 108th, a lot of queuing on there, so not surprisingly during rush hour. We looked at parking. People asked us about parking. We actually did some parking surveys. We didn't see anything that was, you know, over-parked or oversubscribed, except for the park and ride, of course. We had a lot of data on that. But the on-street parking, off-street parking at the commercial centers wasn't drastically oversubscribed. We looked at transit and transit delay. This just shows all those transit routes and where those buses dwell. Obviously, the 255 has the most amount of delay. A lot of that occurs, you know, in downtown Seattle, but this just gives an idea of where those buses are being held up in the corridor. And even closely right at the intersection of 68th and 108th, you can see all the buses that get kind of, and how they're held up just by the intersection. So something people were concerned about. This is one thing we created. Metro looks at the license plates. They collect license plate data, and this is where the people live that are coming to the park and ride. So all of those dots coming from over, you know, 5 miles away are coming to that park and ride. And even though there's a bus that goes right through there. So you're not going to walk to the bus. That's most of us, because we know that bus is held up and delayed as it motors through town. So it's a lot easier to just drive to the park and ride. Not surprising there, but something that we thought was real interesting. So what's going to change? A lot more jobs. I mentioned all those people moving here, not just within Kirkland, but in the region. And then there's a lot going on with transit. We know this, BRT on 405. Light rail is going to come just within the city limits, and rapid ride, that's something Metro Connects is looking at expanding, especially on this corridor. There are a number of signals proposed on 9th and 53rd on the corridor as well, so we'll have a little bit more increase in signals. What can we do? So we came up with a... Sure.
On that last slide, the middle column is potential. The middle column lists potential transit investments. Why they're listed as potential? Because I think at least they're funded.
Yes. Yeah, they're all funded. Rapid Ride might not be completely funded, but yes. Yeah, you're right. That's might be an old slide, pre-election slide. you're right. And so we sent you a memo, and it includes a list of things that, you know, we came up with, working with the community, transit signal priority. On 68th, access management, I think that's a no-brainer for the number of driveways. Greenways for the safe connections, and that's something that the master plan already includes. Bike enhancements, whatever we can do to make those bike lanes continuous, because there are some breaks in the bike lanes. Any questions? I know I'm rushing through this.
You're doing a great job. You're a great presenter. Mr. Arnold.
One question, maybe in future slides. When you talk about transit priority, mm-hmm. There is some detailed work items or detailed proposals listed that talk about using the center lane for transit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is all north of 68th. And given that the backup happens on 108th all the way to the park and ride some days,
yeah.
Can that same approach work through at that entire corridor?
We actually are looking at from 108th south of 68th. So we've looked at two options there that would give a bus maybe like a 1,000-foot jump. But you know, there's options. So we'll review that. We're running some analysis using microsimulation, and then also on 6th south of Kirkland Way. So we're looking at both of those locations.
Okay, and then secondly, part of that. Transit lane talked about a C-curb that would mm-hmm. restrict left turn lanes there. Is that a requirement for that kind of performance, or is this something we could pilot with paint and signage before we make an investment and restrict left
like
turns
red,
throughout
red
the
bike lanes? We could do a temporary, you know, facility not with C-curb. We could put in some other kind of physical thing. But red paint alone, I think there's a lot of confusion, especially the, you know, people desiring to turn left will turn left, and the reason for the C-curb is to maintain that, really restrict those left turns. There could be locations where, like, one or for the fire station, for example, making a break there because for emergency access. I know some communities, City of Seattle, for example, has... a lot of challenges enforcing their red bus lanes, and they wish that they could do photo enforcement.
And just to add to that, one of the things that we talked about is creating a couple locations where people could do U-turns.
Mm-hmm.
But if we didn't have the C-curb, I mean, if you look at 85th, people jump the C-curb when they want to change lanes. And I think if it were just paint, people would keep turning left like they currently do.
Question
Thank
for
you.
Mr. Asher. Thank you.
Thanks. I want to make sure that, you know, you're I'm concerned that you're about to wind up. I haven't got your slide deck, so I'd like to make sure that we get that. It wasn't on the H drive.
Okay.
Are you about to end your presentation? Because what I want to hear is the integration of the development scenarios with traffic analysis. Or are you going into that, or is someone going to go into that?
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about
good.
That, but and save that question because I think we might not fully answer your question.
Okay.
Well, we'll try. So we did look at a range of things that we could do. We looked at all of these locations, and they are the same that are in this memo that you did get receive, and apologize that we didn't have copies of the PowerPoint. Just to explain what some of these things are, transit signal priority either from the right or from the left, and it eats up some of the green time, might extend the queue. So we're looking at the balance of those things. This is the one that would most have the most direct effect on the land use. So in looking at all those conflict points on, this is on 68th between the two, PCC and Met Market, and just the number of conflict points that could be removed, potential conflict points and accidents, we thought there was so much value in that. And we could do a little bit of that with without the widening, without those developments happening, close a driveway here or there. But it's if with redevelopment, it would, it's like a whole new slate. And as Jeff mentioned, widening, including parking, buffering bikeways, extending the bikeways, and just making it a nice, safer, wider sidewalks overall. So that was one connection with the development. We are also looking at the land use and just the number of trips and how that would impact already congested intersections. And then bike intersections, continuing those, putting in those green bike boxes just to improve safety and visibility of bicycles. The greenways, neighborhood greenways, on looking at 60th as that greenway option that parallels 68th, maybe getting more bikes to use 60th and connecting with the trail eventually. So we improved that. We talked about access management. Parking, like on-street parking, is a way of softening the speeds and, you know, can be used as a buffer for bikes. A number of parking policies, so those you've seen those in the list, different policies for enforcing time of day or other restrictions. And that's those. So does that help? That's the summary. How does that sound? One thing we were hoping was to get some direction on the land use so that when we do our analysis, we're not doing an array of options. We're hoping to get down to just a one or so options.
Yeah, this falls short of what I was expecting.
So what we'll be doing is we'll be taking the list that we were presenting, getting feedback on that, and taking that with the feedback that you've provided on the land use and putting those together and doing that evaluation. That's the next step.
And our first step with that is to walk it back to the transportation because they had they had some guidance and some questions for us too, just on the list we had.
Mr. Pascal?
Thank you. So a lot of interesting transportation options. I think I'm going to go along with Councilmember Asher here, where I think as we evaluate some of these higher density options, what we're hearing from the community is, you know, this overwhelming concern about traffic and transportation, parking. And so I really think that we need to tie, you know, mitigation strategies that would likely need to occur with any, if we were to consider that, you know, and I'm not just talking, I think Jeff's presentation was really about kind of on-site stuff, you know, that would go along with the redevelopment, but I'm talking about off-site. That would be really helpful, I think, you know, for the community to understand what other benefits could occur off-site and then for us to understand.
Mr. Nixon?
Well, what I'm not seeing are really bold ideas. And I mentioned earlier the dedicated transit lane idea. We talked about our establishing our own local circulators, shuttles. I'm thinking grade separation at that intersection so that people don't have to stop at the signal at all if they're not turning. Did you think of any really, even though it might be completely wacky, any really bold ideas for how to completely rework the way traffic works there? Or were we thinking mainly just inexpensive little incremental things?
I think right out of the chute of the workshop, one of the things we said, everybody said regional, you know, congestion is at a regional level, you know, at its peak, and this corridor can't hold any more traffic or it needs some expansion. One of the things we talked about at the workshop was, okay, so should we widen 108th? That would be a very big and bold step, and it's a very impactful. It's pretty developed on all sides. And the community kind of said, No, and what we heard a lot of was let's find ways to make transit work better. Mm-hmm. So that was of interest. People did bring back, like you said, Mayor, looking at the CKC and using that for transit as a way of moving transit really, you know, effectively and efficiently, and attracting more people, some of those queued cars over to another option. But some of the things they looked at were a new crossing at 60th, you know, a new road crossing mm-hmm. at 60th across 405, and that was something the Transportation Commission said that's just really impractical. The west side of 405 on 60th is steep, and you'd have to cut off a lot of existing streets. Mm-hmm. So a grade separation is even, you know, tenfold on that, and really could impact access to this neighborhood center. But we can.
Mr. Nixon could send you creative ideas.
That he yes, might yes. Have,
right?
Yes.
We have Ms. Sweet and then Mr. Asher.
I think following along, just in follow up of what John and Dave were talking about, I guess my question is, what will we be presenting at the meeting on the 26th? Is it? Are we going to have something a little bit more ripe for prime time? Because there is a workshop, isn't there, before the meeting?
There is an open house. We'll be actually, if that is kind of targeted for some of the property owners to talk with the community about what their ideas and thoughts are. And then we'll be getting into more detail about these scenarios and some of the options that we want to pursue.
And we'll be formally inviting the Everest neighborhood and the...
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that some of the property owners are trying to reach out to the neighborhoods too and meet with them individually and as part of their neighborhood associations.
Thank you.
And my second question is, some of the changes that are sort of proposed for Metro,
mm-hmm.
those have not been incorporated into?
You know, the Metro Connects looks at this corridor as a rapid ride corridor. The 255 almost meets that criteria today. The one thing that could change is the spacing. So right now the 255 is quarter mile stops, and that under rapid ride that could be half mile. Longer stops, more concentrated, you know, stops so that the bus is moving faster and less and not stopping as often.
And then
less convenient.
More rapid, less convenient.
And then those new stops would come with additional features, say, mm-hmm. like pay before you board, which mm-hmm. then shortens the dwell time, things like that. And so we would get a better, fewer stops, but potentially higher quality and better travel time.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Asher?
Thanks. I'd love to see how you do that, since we can't even put waste containers out right now without getting school kids going in between them. I think there's opportunities, or maybe opportunities, and we have a policy on this, but I'm not sure it's implemented in this area, to improve the grid system of our transportation. Mm-hmm. What is the next street to the south that goes east-west? Isn't it 52nd?
Oh, yeah.
Mile? Mm-hmm. A mile and a half?
Connects down to Lake Washington Boulevard, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. What's the next one to the north? You go up, I guess, at the...
Kirkland.
Convoluted, well, yeah.
Kirkland Way, and then yeah. you can mm-hmm. come back...
The one
that goes by
yeah.
the...
Yeah.
Are there ancillary things? You know, I made the comment when we had one of the rabid residents here one night that you know, everyone wants to live on cul-de-sacs, but no one wants to pay for the consequences of living on cul-de-sacs. Are there opportunities, and do we have policies where we can build a more effective grid system in this area?
Well, there are policies in the Transportation Master Plan that
encourage... Do they apply to Houghton?
I will take a look at Houghton. Okay. I don't remember. Houghton is difficult. You know, you've got the CKC, you've got the steep grades, you've got 405. So it's difficult. We will take another look at what's in the TMP, but that is something that... Transpo looked at for opportunities, and there just aren't a lot. Like Jeannie said, we looked at 52nd was another one that we looked at least for circulation. Mm-hmm. But we will look again. It's tough
because we ran into another one, and I guess we'll be we ran into another situation where we have over a mile between. Mm-hmm. In this case, was north south. Mm-hmm. It was a development that we're currently in the midst of dealing with, and in fact, in the comp plan, it was prohibited to put something through. We're really inconsistent in how we address this, and I would think that would take some of the pressure. If there's any ways of doing it, it would take some of the pressure off of this because this is the only one left.
We can take a look at that, and I think that also goes back to Council Members Nixon's thought about the bigger ideas. Is that I think when we looked at the larger ideas and we at much more of kind of a cursory level, we found that the cost and the benefit it never quite penciled out. Mm-hmm. That the big idea that mm-hmm. given the scale of even the development we're looking at and the scale of the neighborhood is that the big idea didn't quite work with where we were at. So that's one thing but we can go back and look at that again and maybe articulate that a little more clearly up front.
Mm-hmm. Mr.
Trinket? Yeah, so I just have a suggestion. It's clear to me that there's more of an appetite for discussion, particularly about the integration potential between mm-hmm. the transportation and land use. So mm-hmm. We have lots of time between now and April, so would the council like us to bring this back for another study session with maybe a little time to dwell more into how do these transportation scenarios play out?
I think so, too, because I'm looking at the time, and I think we're going to wrap up the conversation.
So we'll find a way to come back maybe in February and continue the conversation.
Thank you very much, Jeannie. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate your time.
One more slide, I think,
yes,
on the
sir.
Schedule.
Right, Angela?
Timetable, yes.
Did you want to talk about the schedule? Or?
I can.
Very quickly.
I know we're kind of behind here. We have planned a meeting this month, a study session with an open house before.
Doreen, you got feedback. There you go. Thank you.
Another one in February, same format. And then in March, we would have an open house and a public hearing. In April, both the Houghton Community Council and the Planning Commission would meet to make their recommendation to you so that we would have recommendation by the end of the month. And then we would come back to you in May. So we certainly have time to come back to another study session and bring you more information.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Asher?
Something that I'd like to hear about if we have another session, but I'm concerned about the time is going to be really compressed. Looking at the comprehensive plans where you've got a well-developed and well-placed five-story authority on the south side of 68th, and on the north side of 68th, we've got a 35-foot, a three-story capability. I'm wondering, does that give us a good step forward from where we are now? You know, the soup was too cold first scenario that we had. Doesn't seem to be satisfactory to anyone other than those that live in the neighborhoods. But their comprehensive plans already provide some redevelopment. I'm wondering what we can work out within those plans, and we just go to what's authorized currently.
So just take the zoning maps, take the comp plans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Food for thought for our next discussion. Okay. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to go into a closed session to discuss a quasi-judicial matter, and we will be back at approximately 7:30-ish, 7:35. Maybe better say 7:35. Yes, with our coats on.
Thank you.
And we'll call you back, Doreen, from our other session.
Okay.
Mayor Wallace?
Thank you.
We're live, Mayor.
Thank you.
Could you start with possibility of a motion to allow Councilmember Marchione to participate remotely?
Absolutely. Good evening. I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of January 17, 2017. Good evening, everyone. Councilmember Marchione is on the speakerphone at this time and wishes to participate in this evening's council meeting in accordance with Section 3.24 of the Council's policies and procedures related to remote attendance. Can you hear us, Ms. Marchione?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. Under our policies and procedures, council members constituting a majority, including those not physically present, may approve Councilmember Marchione's remote attendance by speakerphone. Is there a motion?
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Asher to approve Councilmember Marchione's attendance by speakerphone. Is there any discussion? Well, all those in favor. Now, do I need to have a roll call vote for this? Roll call for this? I do, don't I?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Anderson, the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Marchione.
Councilmember Marchione.
Oh, yes. Councilmember Marchione.
Yes. I didn't know if I could vote on that or not.
Yep, you can.
Thank you.
Now, do you still want a roll call, Ms. Anderson?
For
the actual roll call?
Yes.
Okay. You're on.
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Pascal?
Here.
Councilmember Asher?
Here.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Councilmember Marchione?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We are back in session following a study session related to the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center and 6th Street Corridor Study, as well as a closed session to discuss a quasi-judicial matter. I would ask that the minutes, please, Ms. Anderson, reflect the fact that Mr. Councilmember Pascal recused himself from attending or participating in the closed session. So the first item on our agenda, we're going to move right along to 6B, and it's items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Under item 10C this evening, the council will have before it ordinance 4553 and its summary relating to land use approval of a preliminary and final PUD as applied for by Larry Scrivenich, Little Lion, LLC, and the Planning and Building Department. Its file number SUB15-02157 and setting forth conditions of said approval. Public comment will not be accepted on this matter. On other subjects, please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than three people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to three proponents and three opponents may address the council. So we do have a sign-in sheet, and the first to have signed in is Sandy Helgeson. Welcome.
My name is Sandy Helgeson. I've been a resident in Houghton, a homeowner there since 1991. I've been involved in the Houghton Neighborhood Center plan for many years. Starting in 2012, I worked along other neighbors to delay the zoning process on the Neighborhood Center and wait until the Everest and Houghton neighborhoods could work together. We got confirmation from that time from both the City Council and Planning Commission that the comp plan that was signed off wasn't in line with the zoning plans, and that at a future date we would work together with Everest and Houghton together to relook at the comp plan. I sat through the study session this evening, and I'm feeling a bit nervous and frustrated that it seems like they're calling the comp plan a done deal, and that wasn't the feeling that we had in 2012 and 2012-14. It was that the comp plan maybe wasn't done in favor of the community. A lot of community people spoke up against it, and we were going to have the opportunity to actually relook at the comp plan, that it wasn't a done deal. And I'm not sure that I'm hearing that here tonight, earlier at the study session. Together, our neighborhoods and residents have spent so many hours attending meetings, writing letters, and speaking up. Over these many years, you've heard from hundreds of our residents why they are against any changes to the Houghton Neighborhood Center. I feel like you're trying to fix a problem that isn't broken. People, you talk to most everybody, and they love Houghton Neighborhood Center. It's a reason they move there. There's such an array of retail. There's two grocery stores, a yoga studio, pet stores, a framing shop. And if you upzone, we heard tonight, we will lose a lot of that retail. And nobody wants to lose any of that retail. One of the reasons the retail is there is so successful is because parking is easy. And there's a lot of opponents to surface parking. But people that use it love it. And right now, a lot of people do use it, and it makes it easy to zip in and out of a store. If you have to go into an underground parking garage, it's a whole new scene, and a lot of people don't even bother. There is cases where mixed use with parking garages, the retail fails. The offices and housing do great, but the ground-level retail is not so successful. Another concern I have is that as soon as you upzone, right now, a lot of the rents there are reasonable. The apartments are somewhat affordable. As soon as you upzone, builders build out to the max. They want to maximize their dollar. And a lot of those affordable rents for residents and retail owners will go away. I hope that you will listen to what people have said over these last 4 or 5 years. They've told you over and over again, we don't want changes. I'm not sure who you're trying to add value for, but it sounds like to the city and maybe to the developers. I would love to have 5 stories and put 10 houses on my lot, but it doesn't add value to my neighborhood. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for being here. The next person to have signed in is Anna Rising.
I'm Anna Rising. I'm the chair of the Everest Neighborhood Association. And a couple points I wanted to bring up is during the study session, Councilmember Asher brought up that the goals of the proposed zoning changes are based on the Houghton committee values that were discussed in 2011. And I just want to remind everybody that those proposed 5-story zoning changes are not the Everest residents or the Everest Neighborhood Association values. I think everything is geared towards what was discussed back then, and we were told that everything was going to be on the table so we could all come together. What I saw at the community workshop and from the survey and also from talking to a lot of the residents is that there is a very large number of residents that are against any changes. There are some of us who would like to see some modest changes, but residents are very more and more increasingly concerned with the estimated 5,000 employees that will be working at the future Kirkland Urban location, also the additional 500 daily trips that will be happening along 68th and 108th with the expansion of Northwest University. Having wider sidewalks, less curb cuts, and a limited increase in retail is attractive to residents, but not with the negative impacts of the increased density and the traffic congestion and the possibility of also losing some of our retail. I understand that the property owners and the developers' goals are to maximize their profits and to use their properties to increase the value of their properties. But I feel like these are not reflective of the goals of the residents who live there. And as Sandy mentioned, we love our neighborhood center. And while some of us would really like to see some improvements, we're very worried that our concerns are not being taken seriously, as seriously as the goals of increased density and development. So thank you.
Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Seth Leary.
Good evening, Council. I'm Seth Leary. I've been a Kirkland resident for 21 years, and I'm the education director at Kirkland Arts Center. As I'm sure you know, Kirkland Arts Center is the owner and steward of the historic Peter Kirk Building, just behind us, a short rainy walk away on Market Street. The building is 125 years old. We've been there for 55 of those years. This beautiful gem of Kirkland is really due for some seismic retrofitting. It's a brick building. It's old. It is occupied all day, every day by people. And should a seismic event happen, we really need to make sure that the building remains extant and is around for many more years to come. So what we're asking from the city is for a grant of $50,000 that we will go toward a seismic retrofitting project, and this would have tie-ins connecting the walls to the underside of the first floor, which helps stabilize the building. This would be part of basically a completion grant for roughly $100,000 project. We already have raised the rest of the money, so So we're looking for the city to help us bring that to completion, and we will conduct that later this year. We also plan to, our hope is to leverage this money to get the county and the state on board so that we can pursue two other phases of a similar process on our building. We met with the Planning and Economic Development Committee of this council on January 9 and received its unanimous support for the project, and for that we're very grateful. So we're asking the council to recommend that this be placed on an upcoming agenda for your future consideration. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for being here. The next person to have signed in is David Greshler.
Madam Mayor and council members, David Greshler, resident of Kirkland at 11010 Northeast 65th Street. I'm here today, and I'm actually with a group of people here, to really thank you. And that's for the proclamation that you passed last Tuesday's city council meeting, proclaiming Kirkland as a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people. In fact, we think this may be one of the most important documents you've ever drafted for the city of Kirkland, and here's why. The incoming presidential administration has talked about instituting policies that could very well violate the principles of this proclamation. Some of these policies may have to be implemented at the city level, right, by the police, by the city staff, who report to you. And as a result, you will have to make some very tough decisions, potentially, over the next few years. And the proclamation, we believe, will serve as an excellent guideline for you as you make those decisions. And you also need to know that we have your back on this. The proclamation, because the proclamation has really been an inspiration to this group here. For a number of weeks, we've been meeting and talking about what we can do to ensure the rights of all residents and visitors to this city. And so we were really heartened when this proclamation came out. This is great. And in fact, we're still trying to determine how to best organize and find ways to make Kirkland safer, more inclusive, diverse, and welcoming. What was great about the proclamation is it gave us language by which we could sort of wrap our heads around this and potentially create a mission. And so what we've come up with so far is to sort of say, let's use the language of that proclamation and really, number one, be an advocate for these principles and find ways to make Kirkland even safer, even more welcoming, even more diverse. Be a watchdog to ensure that we do hold to the principles of this proclamation. And three, be prepared. And really think ahead about what potentially could happen and what can we do about it. So what am I specifically talking about? Well, let me give you one example. There's been talk by the incoming administration of a registry of people of Muslim faith. So what can we do about that? We should be thinking now, what will we do as a city in case that happens? And how can we as citizens do something and work with you on that? So that's one example. The other is, you've heard of DACA and potentially the elimination of DACA. So are we really going to allow students who have abided by the law, who have been fingerprinted, right, to actually be pulled from our public schools, our neighborhoods, and be deported? And what are we going to do about that? So we really, we're still organizing. We're still trying to understand this. But we know that these are going to be tough decisions. And like I said, we have your back on this. We really want to work with you to make sure these principles are upheld. I'm out of time, but we have Paula White who will continue her thoughts.
Thank you. Next, I have Paula White.
Hello, Council. I'm Paula White. I live in Houghton, Kirkland. So as a group, we're still determining how to best organize for a city-centric focus around these issues, and we really welcome any feedback from you about people and groups that we can connect to. We would be happy to contribute to any efforts that you are planning in this area. We also invite others concerned about these issues to join us. Send us an email to kirklandsafe@gmail.com. When fear and divisiveness seems to be the growing norm, we want to work with you to make Kirkland a shining example of a city that is the safest, most inclusive, diverse and welcoming in this great nation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, can you say that email again?
Sure. It's kirklandsafe@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So that proclamation is just the beginning of what we think is going to be a body of work, and we thank you for coming out tonight. I think the city's point person on this right now is Leslie Miller. There is another group that has that worked with us on that proclamation. It's going to be a council retreat topic, so it's an ongoing work, and I think that there's many of us that would like to talk to you further about this, but certainly Leslie Miller can keep you updated on our staff. Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Rick Deskin.
Hi, I'm Rick Deskin. I've been a resident of Kirkland for 22 years, and I'm here representing Keep Film in Washington. KeepFilmInWa.com is a campaign to both renew and expand our state's film incentive. I'm an actor. I've worked 6 days last year as an actor. None of those days were in Kirkland. In Kirkland, we had 6 to 8 permits for film projects last year. We can do better as a city, but also we need to support the film initiative. It's 10 years old. It's got a great history of documentation, and we just need people to sign the petition and share it. And it would be really, really great if council and the mayor could possibly do a proclamation for Film Day on March 13th. I don't know, all the ins and outs of that and all the whereases, but I know I've seen them from Seattle and I've seen them from other cities. And Film Day is going to be March 13th in Olympia. And we just need as many actors, crew, people that love film to show up in Olympia, but also at a minimum, you need to sign and share the petition at keepfilminwa.com.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your comments. We've reached the end of our sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? Seeing none, I'll declare this items from the audience period closed. Tonight we have a very special guest. It is our King County Council member, the very hardworking Claudia Balducci. Welcome, Council Member Balducci. City Manager, do you have a welcome?
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, as you said, we are very fortunate tonight to have as our King County Council representative from District 6, Claudia Balducci. Spent 12 years on the Bellevue City Council, including the last two as mayor, before being elected to the King County Council. Also a member of the Sound Transit Board of Directors, and here to provide us an update with what's going on at King County. So welcome, Councilmember Balducci.
Thank you. Thank you for the nice welcome. Madam Mayor, Mr. Deputy Mayor, council members, thank you so much for having me here tonight, giving me some time on your agenda. Councilmember Marcioni, I'm glad to hear your voice. Hope you're feeling well, and can you hear me okay? She's probably muted.
Getting to the unmute is sometimes...
Yes, it's sometimes difficult. I'm going to assume so until I hear otherwise.
Yes, I can hear you. There you go.
Oh, very good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So I'm here tonight just to give you, as I came last year, to give a brief update. Last year it was not an update because it was my very first few weeks on the job, and now I've had a whole year, about some of the things that happened in 2016 at King County. I think many of you are aware of many of these things, but I'll try to hit the highlights of things that matter the most to Kirkland. We spent a great deal of time on our comprehensive plan update and some marijuana land use regulations, but those don't really impact Kirkland very much. So while we feel your pain, because you have to do those things as well, I'm going to skip over things like that. 2016 was a really big year for transit at King County. In addition to the Sound Transit Phase 3 planning and vote, which I know we all worked very hard on and would like to see a slightly better outcome, there were other things as well. I will commit to you here on the Sound Transit Phase 3 that with the work since the measure has passed, the study for what will happen in the north-south between Bellevue and Kirkland rail or bus corridor will happen there. That's going to proceed now because it's funded, and I just want to commit to you that we work together to try to come up with the right answer for high-capacity transit through Kirkland. In the meantime, we weren't ignoring the rest of the transit system, and that's the bus system. So this year, we passed not only an update to the Metro Strategic Plan, but also a new almost 25-year Metro long-range plan called Metro Connects. Councilmember Asher, who serves on the Regional Transit Committee, has been a very active participant in helping to shape that plan. It's a really cool vision. I would recommend the website to you because you can look on it and see the type of service from a rider's perspective that will be possible with the investments in the long-range plan as compared to what they are today. It's a much broader, more frequent service when we are able to implement that plan. The main piece of work still remaining, though, is the implementation part of the plan. That was a matter of some discussion. When will we see new bus hours? When will we see new rapid rides? How will these different types of service roll out? And that is a piece of work that we will be taking up at the Regional Transit Committee this year with your participation and hopefully get to a place where people feel comfortable knowing when these services are coming and how, because not all the funding is identified, obviously. Other good news in the world of bus service, we've shifted from being in a cut mode and around bus service to being in a stable mode, and now this year we are finally moving into an add mode. We have enough revenue coming in to be able to add new bus hours. You'll see those starting to come in the next 2 years. And a lot of money has been put towards alternative services. These are meant to be flexible, one-size-does-not-fit-all type solutions for places that are difficult to serve. We already see some van-type service on Mercer Island to meet their special needs. And I recently found out that the Lake Washington Institute of Technology proposal for an alternative service has been approved to move into the next phase, and they'll start planning what that service might look like and what that partnership might look like, which would be amazing because they really lack for bus service for the students after a certain time of night when they're all in school. Moving to human services, we reauthorized the mental illness and drug dependency sales tax measure for another, I believe it was 7-year reauthorization. That's a very a valuable set of resources that we use to provide key human services. We began to implement the Best Starts for Kids initiative, which was a voter approved initiative in 2015. Now, and will over time invest almost $400 million in prevention services for youth and families. One of the early wins there is that there's a youth and family homelessness prevention program. It was tested at LifeWire here on the East Side. It's a way of engaging with clients to make sure that we do the easiest and cheapest and best thing for people, which is keep them from becoming homeless in the first place. If a client says to their caseworker at LifeWire in this program, you know, I need $75 to tide me over so that I can pay my rent this month, there's very few programs that allow you to do that, to actually give people the money they need to keep from losing their home. But if $75 will keep somebody stable and then they stabilize, that's $75 versus thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars per client if they become homeless and need to be rehoused. So this new program has been very successful in pilot and will be rolling out countywide this year. In 2017, we'll be moving towards the Veterans and Human Services Levy reauthorization. That's another human services bucket of funding that goes to the voters in the fall. And Councilmember Asher, I have been mindful of your passionate advocacy for outcome and performance reporting and measurement. It's very true. These are all great programs. These are great services. They're very needed, even in our communities on the East Side, where people sometimes assume we don't have needs, but we do. But we're putting a lot of money towards human services, and we need to be keeping an eye out that we're achieving the results that we want to achieve, because if we're not, we should change how we spend that money, or we should not spend it. So I introduced and the council passed a budget proviso this year that directs the county staff to present us with a combined set of performance measurements that we can then start to use to see how all our programs are working together to receive the kinds of achieve, thank you, the kind of outcomes we want. This was a budget year at King County, and I was pleased, I guess, to serve on the budget leadership team. It was a lot of hours. It's a big budget at King County, but it was nice to be asked in my first year, and I think that's probably due to my experience as a department director there before I was an elected official. It was interesting to be on the other side of that equation. Instead of submitting our budget and hoping it goes through, I got to decide, so that was pretty. It's like turn around being fair play. You all know how that feels. we started with the year with a $50 million budget deficit, and we managed to erase that by the end of the budget process, partially because we had a better forecast. We are still in a building boom in this county. But we also adopted some additional revenue. We adopted a new plan to charge rent to utility providers who are using King County right-of-way for their equipment. I was surprised that this wasn't being done already, because in the cities, we have franchises, we have different ways that providers actually reimburse the city for using our right-of-way, the ones that don't pay a utility tax. But there's nothing like that in King County. I want you to know that we're aware that there are many significant details to be worked out about this. It is not planned to be implemented in 2017 or even the first half of 2018 while we work with the providers and cities who have contacted us about concerns about how this impacts their budget. So we'll work through those significant details before implementing that new revenue source. There were some cuts, but we were able to restore some of the originally proposed cuts. We all occasionally rely on the county sheriff's air support unit, the helicopter, Guardian 1, and the Marine Patrol unit. Those were scheduled to be cut originally, but we were able to fund them in the end, and so they will continue in service. So will the county's electronic home monitoring program, although we weren't able to find a funding source for our work release program, and we're going to have to figure out a way to reinstitute that because it's very important. The county's got a big housing focus right now, and it shows in our budget. We put aside $5.9 million for sheltering services and $1 million for a partnership fund to work with cities outside of Seattle that are trying to implement housing solutions for homelessness particularly. And I know that Kirkland has a priority to site a women's shelter. And so I hope that we can work together that some of that funds might be able to be used to help you in that regard. All right, and then one of my big priorities for the upcoming year in housing is, as you all know, cities work very hard to work on housing affordability and the cost of housing. In places like Kirkland, Bellevue, where I live, the rental costs are runaway. The housing costs are still increasing year over year, and it's driving people out, and people who have been living here or who want to live here aren't able to. So cities have got, and Kirkland's been a real leader on this, strong strategies to try to address and provide affordable housing through ARCH, through policies, through projects. The state has got laws that they have passed that require us to make certain plans, and they've also got funding sources, but there's no regional ban to this. So if somebody can't afford to live in Kirkland anymore and therefore they move to Tukwila, there's no policy, there's no approach that tries to address that regional shift that's happening. And so I've asked the council and the executive, and they've agreed to pull together a group of people this year, stakeholders, including cities, to talk about what can be done at the regional level to try to help address that drive till you qualify phenomenon that we see. Almost done. We also have a nice opportunity this year in that there's a state-authorized rental car tax that everybody pays when they rent cars. Mostly these are people who are coming to visit the area, and almost all of these taxes come through the city of SeaTac because they come from the airport. And the money had been set aside, some large percentage of it had been set aside to pay off the bonds on the Kingdom, which are now retired. And the money now can be used at the direction of the county authority for aquatics and sports and activities, but we all know that means aquatics here in Kirkland, right? Yeah. So in the county budget, I was able to set aside up to $2 million as support for a possible aquatics facility somewhere in this area. The cities of Redmond, Bellevue, and Kirkland have been meeting with King County for several months now to talk about this partnership, and I'm glad I was able to provide some seed funding to make it, you know, sort of real and light a fire under it, so to speak. But they're meeting now to talk about possible locations and a path forward, operating options. Lots of good ideas. We know we need a 50-meter pool. There's some thought about whether you could combine that with an ice rink. Apparently they work well together because of the heating and cooling requirements. So that was just something I was really excited to be able to do, and I hope that we can get it off the ground in the coming year. Another piece of legislation that I did not introduce, but I, you know, sometimes you don't start it, but you finish it. I brought it home, was the Preservation Action Fund. This is also a bonding. It came out of the, I forget the exact source of these, but it was the same as the Cultural Arts Fund that For Culture used for a bunch of projects a couple of years ago before my time. Bonding some of that stream will allow for a revolving fund to support preservation activities. It will generate $2 million approximately per year. And so the $2 million can be invested in probably just about one project at a time. Very few of these projects can do with less. But then when that pays back, as time goes on, as the properties are sited and sold, it can hopefully grow. And the first project in line to receive these funds is the True Blood House here in Kirkland. So I know that it needs a permanent home, and hopefully this will be enough in terms of funding to help it to find that permanent home and be preserved. And I did hear, and I have spoken with the folks from the Kirkland Arts Center, and we have, I'm going to be working on trying to find a way to help that folks from the county a little bit as well, too. I know you all are working on putting in a contribution of $50,000, and I'm attempting to find the next slice of money, and then our friends at the state will need to help as well. On the East Side Rail Corridor, as you know, we have all been very inspired by the Cross Kirkland Corridor, and we've been removing rails and doing a lot of preparatory work, funding, planning, et cetera, King County. Well, this year in 2017, we are going to open the first segment of trail within the King County part. It will be from the current terminus of the Cross Kirkland Corridor at the South Kirkland Park and Ride down all the way to the 520 Regional Trail. And that, the theory is, will open on Bike to Work Day this year. So that's it's been something we've been working on for a long time, and I'm very excited about that. We also have a line on some federal funding that the governor has included in his budget to help to restore the Wilburton Trestle so that we can continue the bike path on down south. And then last but not least, and I really hate to end on this note, but let's talk about solid waste for a moment. I have been very aware of the issues around solid waste and solid waste transfer facilities on the east side from my time at Bellevue. I know Kirkland's interest to close the Houghton facility permanently because of incompatibility with the surrounding neighborhood. And I share the concern that we all have on the east side that there be enough transfer station capacity for the future. We're growing, and it needs to be here. It also needs to be spread out enough so that people can use transfer station capacity and not all have to go to one location, which is going to be very inconvenient for most people. So a lot of work underway. My goal, my commitment to you, is that we're going to get to a decision. I would have liked it to have been in 2017, but I'm told it will be in early to mid-2018. But we need to get to a decision, figure it out, and start to implement already. And that is going to be an item of significant attention at King County and a number of committees, including the one that Councilmember Sweet serves on, the MSWAC, I don't know what it stands for, Municipal Solid Waste Advisory Committee, I guess. Excellent. I passed. Okay. So that's my report to you. And I really do enjoy serving you on the King County Council. I know we are not capable of doing everything everybody wants us to, but I think we did a pretty good job this year, and I look forward to working with you in the coming year as well. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
That was a fabulous report. Questions or comments? Ms. Sweet.
I just want to thank you so much, Claudia, for your help with all of the issues that we bring up, particularly solid waste. Mm-hmm. You're doing a fabulous job, and
thank you.
When we had coffee the other day, what you told me was you love your job.
I do.
It shows.
Thank you.
Mr. Asher.
Thank you. And I would particularly like to just relate the absolute leadership that you demonstrated with the Regional Transit Committee last year and with all of the transit ins and outs as we found them throughout the year, and a lot of really hard work.
Yeah.
So thank you. It was a pleasure bringing that together, and thanks for your leadership.
I would like to reflect that comment back at all the city participants in those processes, because it really was the persistence of asking questions and making sure our interests were heard and met that got us to where we got. And it took way more than just one person with the gavel, but we had a good team. So thank you for that.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
You are the master of your topic, and big and small, you're watching out for Kirkland, and it shows. Thank you so much. We
thank
really
you,
appreciate
Mayor.
Your representation.
All right. Take care. Have a good evening.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'd like to ask Deputy Mayor Arnold to present the audit of accounts.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We have payroll in the amount of $2,969,382.03, and bills in the amount of $4,627,840.64.
Is there a motion to approve? Thank you, Mr. Asher.
I'd move first and final reading of the consent calendar.
Second.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve the consent calendar. Are there any questions, comments, or corrections? I think we need a roll call, please. Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon.
Aye.
Councilmember Pascal.
Aye.
Councilmember Asher.
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet.
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione.
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Consent calendar is approved.
Madam Mayor, yes, just one comment on the consent agendas. I asked the city manager to put together a public story on the interlocal agreement with Tucson, Arizona, to demonstrate how far we will go to save a few dollars. And I think this is one of the things that we do a lot of really good things, but this is absolutely a case study in us looking out for the use of the citizens' dollars. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well done. Thank you, sir. All right, the next item on our agenda is item 10. It's under unfinished business. It's resolution 5233, authorizing the city manager to execute a real property purchase and sale agreement for Totem Lake. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So, as you recall, this was an action that you authorized us to do as part of the capital improvement projects in the budget last year to get Totem Lake in order to do all the development in and around Totem Lake, including Totem Lake Park and many transportation projects and other issues and the Totem Lake Connector. So we finally have been able to work through an agreement with the Conservation District. And here to tell you all about it and answer any questions is our Deputy City Manager, Tracy Dunlap, who was critical in bringing this home. She spent about the last year trying to make this happen, so I'm very grateful for her efforts.
And me too. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, City Council. This is the culmination of the work of many people, and interestingly, Jenny Schroeder retired 1 year ago on the 15th of January, and I kind of took the reins from this for her, so I think she's probably watching, which she does, even though she's retired, so watching this quite happily. But Michael Kogel and Bill Evans from the City Attorney's Office have also been very instrumental in this, and I know Michael has been before the Conservation District any number of times. So, but we're happy to say that we have reached terms, but they're not simple. So here's a picture. It's a little washed out there, but a picture of the lake, because I think a lot of people don't even realize that there is a lake. I know we all do. But it's an area that the Conservation District took ownership of in 1979 as mitigation for a development project that occurred to the east. And that 1979 deed contained a number of restrictions. One was the use and development as a passive park, preserving wetlands and wildlife. Another restriction was it requires the name to be Totem Lake Park. And then last, but by no means least, it requires consent of the prior owners to modify the ownership, uses, conditions, and the other terms that are with the deed, subject to reversion of the property to the prior owners if that consent is not received. G&B Estates, who was the prior owner, is no longer an active corporation. You might remember that a few years back, we actually went through a process to get a piece of property for Totem Lake Way, which involved contacting one of the former principals of G&B Estates. But in doing even more research on this, apparently the reversion rights were assigned to another corporation not too long after 1979, Caribou Development Corporation, which is also a corporation that's no longer active. And so there is complication number one, is who exactly needs to consent to the transaction. So the process, the King Conservation District attorney is working to identify the successors and obtain consent with assistance from our city attorney's office. And through a number of conversations about what's the best way to do this, because it is rather complicated, our preferred approach would be for the successors to quit claim deed the property to the Conservation District. And as a result of that, that would extinguish all these existing covenants, and then we would replace it with the city's covenant to essentially develop and maintain the property as a park, preserve the wetlands and the attendant wildlife to the extent consistent with human use of the park, which is similar to the covenant that currently exists and very much consistent with the city's intent. And one of the reasons that this preferred approach came about was if the city were to violate that new covenant, and there's no reason we think that will happen, the property would revert to the King Conservation District as a conservator, as opposed to one of a couple of defunct corporations at this point or their heirs. And so part of the complication of what's in the document and what will delay potentially the closing is trying to make this so, essentially, trying to track down the right people to sign the right documents. But if the preferred approach proves not to be feasible, we could obtain consent under the existing covenants, which is probably simplest once we find the successors. But we always have the option of condemnation, which the city would initiate, and then we go through a process. And the conservation district would be the owner in that at that point. And the hope would be if we have to go that route, which is certainly the most time-consuming route, that then that would also extinguish the covenants as well. So in terms of the broad elements of the purchase and sale agreement, the purchase price that we've agreed upon is $550,000, which is paid in a number of ways. $143,125 and some change is the Kirkland balance in KCD's member jurisdiction grant program. So there's a portion of the tax revenues that they collect from within Kirkland that's set aside for Kirkland purposes. For the most part, that money is used for specific events associated with Green Kirkland. The use of this accumulated balance does not jeopardize our ability to continue doing that. This is an amount that's accumulated over a long period of time where we've used some for those programs, but there's been some left over. And so the first $143,000 of the purchase price would be KCD retaining that funding to use for other programs. The remainder, which is just under $407,000, is split between park acquisition funds and the surface water utility in recognition of the value of the lake to the system. And so I may phone a friend if I don't get these statistics right, but the question that was asked is really, what is its value? And believe me, the reason this took at least 2 years is that is the question. What is the value? But what is the value to the surface water system? The Public Works Department put together some interesting information. The lake in and of itself is an important part of the surface water utility in that it retains surface water. And while you really can't build a lake, if you were to build a detention facility that would detain the kind of surface water that the lake can retain, the estimate is that it would cost about $100 million to build some sort of detention facility to retain and deal with the surface water that the lake deals with. The other way to kind of look at the value is the council approved purchasing a parcel that was owned by King County that's adjacent to the Cross Kirkland Corridor that's very close to this property for $190,000. And if you take that valuation and extend it to all of the area around the actual lake, the land area, that would be well in excess of $1 million. And so while there are many different ways to value a property that is essentially a giant protected area, a giant wetland, we think this is a reasonable purchase price because the Conservation District felt it was important that they see value for their entire constituency, which covers the entire county. And we think there is a use for it continuing to be in preservation for surface water purposes. But the main project we're looking at is to develop parcels around it and continue the boardwalk system around the lake itself for parks. And I have a slide in a moment to say how this fits in the park acquisition funds. The purchase and sale agreement also establishes the process to try to secure a clear title and defines the legal options I talked earlier. And the Conservation District Board of Supervisors voted on January 9th to authorize their chair to execute the agreement. And so this is the companion resolution to authorize the city manager to do so. Just to give you a sense, because I think this was one of the questions that came up in reviewing the packet, of what the park's acquisition balance is, the table that was provided by Michael Kogel of what's in the CIP is net of the funds that have already been programmed for this purchase, the $200,000 for Totem Lake, and the $190,000 for the King County parcel adjacent to the CKC. So what's in there for opportunities, essentially, for park acquisition in the recently adopted CIP is about $4.6 million of park acquisition funding. And that tends to get prioritized as opportunities present themselves. The benefits of ownership for the city, or actually the benefits of the ownership transfer overall, the city's been maintaining and improving the lake pretty much since the time it was turned over to the district. We've done a lot of maintenance, but we've also dealt with some of the flooding issues, which has also improved the quality of the wetlands and the quality of the lake. But I think a lot of the motivation is to simplify the development process for Totem Lake Park, for the Totem Lake Connector, which would likely have a footing that would be in the park property. And while we've had a great and cooperative relationship with KCD over time, these are projects that if to have a third party involved and or many other parties involved and always having to have permission would slow these projects down over time. It would demonstrate that we have site control for grant purposes. Whenever we've pursued grants, we have to do a memorandum of understanding with the district to basically say that they agree that we can apply for a grant. But I also believe that KCD thinks that this transfer will allow them to focus on their core functions because they don't, by and large, own property. They do projects to restore property, and that's one reason they've had us do this work over time. So the next steps, again, the requested action is to authorize the city manager to execute the purchase and sale agreement. This may take several weeks because the district feels strongly that they want to identify who the successors and assigns are before they execute the agreement because they want there to be no ambiguity about whether the reversion clause is triggered. So it might be a number of weeks, even though both parties are authorized to sign the agreement. We'll continue to work with their legal counsel to facilitate securing the clear title. And then upon completion, we'll establish a closing date and how that will work. And so if we are successful in our preferred approach, we hope that'll be in the next several months. If we actually end up in the condemnation process, it'll probably be longer than that. But we are at least on a trail, and I think both parties feel that this is a good transaction for both both organizations. So that's my formal presentation, if anybody has questions.
Thank you, Mr. Asher.
Would like a motion?
Yes, please.
Madam Mayor, I would move resolution 5233 authorizing the city manager to execute a real property purchase and sale agreement for Totem Lake.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve resolution 5233. Discussion? Mr. Pascal.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I'm very appreciative and grateful for staff reaching this agreement with the King Conservation District. Being new, I recognize that this was a long time coming. I've heard that over and over, difficult process and negotiation. But I also think about the city as a whole and how we're blessed with such a wonderful park system. Yet as we grow, our investments also need to grow to improve all our parks. And so as we invest in Totem Lake Park, I would say that one of the things that I learned through this was I was a little disappointed that another public entity required Kirkland taxpayers to pay money for the rights to improve a property that they have neglected in the past. But that being said, our tax dollars are in high demand, so I wish that we didn't have to spend this money. But I'm going to support this resolution as it does provide value to Kirkland and enables us to meet the vision that we have for Totem Lake Park. I just want to continue to find ways to stretch our dollars so we can do more because we have a lot of needs in this city. So thank you.
Absolutely. Others, Mr. Asher.
I just wanted to comment, Madam Mayor, that in my tenure on this council, I will have participated in buying a railroad and now a lake. Never thought that would happen.
Thank you. Others? Well, I want to thank you very much, Tracy. There is nobody more checked out to manage a complicated legal snail trail like this, and we are in good hands having you do it, and I really appreciate your work. And I want to thank the Park Board. I see Sue Contreras here for their willing to be adaptable, and I think it was Deputy Mayor Arnold who suggested that we move Totem Lake Park to the front of the line to coincide with the redevelopment of the village at Totem Lake. So I always think of decisive, responsive government, and that's exactly what we're demonstrating here. So very, very happy to be moving ahead. It's good ideas, but the hard work is what you did. So thank you.
Thank you.
So the question is on the motion to approve Resolution 5233, authorizing the city manager to execute a real property purchase and sale agreement for Totem Lake. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold. Well, could we have a roll call, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Aye.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Resolution 5233 is approved. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is item 10B. It's the 2017 State Legislative Update number 1. City Manager.
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor. As you know, we have the state legislative session starting, and we always provide you with a updated every council meeting until the session ends, which is going to be on time this year. They're going to be swift, action-oriented. So here to give you an update on the actions of our legislative committee and our legislative priorities is our Intergovernmental Relations Manager, Lori McKay.
Thank you, City Manager. Good evening, Madam Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council Members. if I could, please, with this 105-day session just beginning, I'd like to take a moment to thank you, Council Members, and the directors and your staff by extension. Thank you in advance for all the help in moving things along in the coming 4 months. It's not lost on me at all how hard I lean on everybody to provide bill review and comments and testimony and factoids and trips to Olympia that take 3 hours, 4 hours for 2 minutes of testimony. But as this first week came to a close, we have identified already 85 bills for staff to review and comment on. And so there's a lot of work ahead. Last year, staff reviewed 190 bills. The prior long session in 2015, they reviewed over 300 bills. So this process is tedious, and it's a team effort. And I'm really grateful to be on this team with all of you. So, speaking of teams, this picture is from last Monday, the opening of session. Representatives Springer and McBride doing a selfie on the floor. As the city manager mentioned, tonight you're getting your first update on the 2017 priorities. I'm going to begin with a quick reminder of what our priorities are for this session. I'll follow up with a quick update on current status of the ones that I can provide status on. And then I also included in Council's packet the preliminary draft of the support items agenda for 2017. The support items agenda are the legislative policy they reflect the legislative and policy priorities of many of Kirkland's allies. Staff received a few additions and updates since I prepared the materials for your packet, and I welcome any questions, feedback, or directions from you tonight. So this slide here is a reminder of what our priorities are for the coming session. It's also found on page 80 of Council's packet. Our first priority is related to new funding and policy tools to address homelessness and create more affordable housing. Specifically, we've prioritized restoring the housing trust fund to pre-recession levels, adding affordable housing to the list of eligible projects that can be funded by REIT 1 and REIT 2, and extending the document recording fee for housing, eliminate the sunset and increase the fee. The next priority is to focus on allowing transit-oriented development up at the Kingsgate Park and Ride. And then the next one is to provide adequate and sustainable funding to maintain high-quality statewide training for our law enforcement personnel. And then the last one on this page is to allow jurisdictions the option to set a lower taxing limit for metropolitan parks districts. We also have a priority of finding capital or transportation budget funding for connecting the Cross Kirkland Corridor with the Redmond Central Connector over on Willows Road. And then the allowing state and local governments the option of replacing the property tax cap, which is currently fixed at 1%, with a cap that is indexed by to both population growth and inflation. And then finally, we have a priority of trying to make some updates to the Public Records Act, and specifically exempting non-appointed volunteers from records requests, except for when those responsive records are already retained by the jurisdiction, by the city, establishing a nominal fee for filing records request, and a per-document charge for electronic requests, and then finally creating a path of predictability on fines for jurisdictions that make good faith efforts to comply with records requests. So this is going to the quick updates. I have to catch up on my notes here. On housing, Senator Fain has sponsored Senate Bill 5182. This provides local governments with options to preserve affordable housing in their communities. This was Seattle's bill last year. It would create a preservation tax exemption for property owners in the private market who agree to set aside a percentage of their buildings for tenants earning less than the area median income. So that bill was dropped late last week. Representative McBride is working on a local omnibus bill draft. It hasn't dropped yet, so it doesn't have a number, but it will be a big bill concerning local option tools to promote and preserve and incentivize affordable housing, things that we anticipate seeing in this bill are the demolition fee. If you recall last session, that was Kirkland's priority on providing new revenue for housing, so that'll be in there. REAP 3, allowing cities and counties to impose an additional excise tax of 0.25% on the sale of real estate property. That will be in there. That was attempted last year. It didn't move. And then this third bullet, the allowing the use of existing funds from REAP 1 and 2 to support affordable housing, that is on our priority list right now. And then finally, making Councilmatic the authority to levy the county affordable housing and related services sales tax, in other words, removing the requirement to receive voter approval to implement or impose that tax. Next up on our priority list, the status, allowing jurisdictions the option to set lower taxing limit on the MPD. Our new senator up in the first district, Senator Palumbo, is the prime sponsor of this bill. And it's he's gotten co-signers from Senators Rossi, Cooter, and Fain, and Billig. So he's done a great job of getting this bill prepared and dropped. It will be heard this Thursday down in Olympia at 1:30, and the city manager will be making the great trek with me to testify in support of the bill. Moving to
someone else would like to take a noon trip on Thursday afternoon. That one is before the Senate
local government committee
and would be Councilmember Nixon was the first choice to try to make that. He's otherwise occupied by people from out of town and out of the country. If anyone else would like to testify on that one, please let Lori know. Are you going on the bag drag on Thursday?
You bet.
Okay, so you have a wonderful accompaniment and full briefing and full support of our lobbyists for this priority effort.
Seeing none.
I'll be out of town, or I won't go. Okay.
I have sick dog. All right, so moving on.
Have a fun time in Olympia, Mr. Tripp.
I'll be there.
Moving on to our the Public Records Act updates. We have on the exempt non-appointed volunteers, we are working with committee staff to respond to requests for additional information and definitions to both non-appointed volunteers and appointed volunteers. On the nominal fee for electronic records, this issue is among others are being worked on by the large stakeholder group that Representative McBride and Representative Springer and others have been convening. Councilmember Nixon has been serving on that stakeholder group, and I'm not quite sure where things are in terms of being ready to drop bills.
I can give you a quick update.
Please do. Yeah.
I was down in Olympia last Tuesday for a work session of the House Local Government Committee and spoke with Representative Neely, and he said it's real close now, right? Uh-huh. That they've been putting the finishing touches on the language, and I've been expecting every day to see the bills introduced, but we have not seen the final language yet. But okay. We're expecting it this week.
Excellent. All right, so then finally on the pathway to predictability, we are working with Senator Cooter to respond to concerns raised by the AWC and by members of the requester groups. She is so far willing to sponsor it. And I don't know, City Manager, do you have any detail you want to add on this bill?
So we're having a conversation with through Councilmember Nixon with interest about WASHCOG that has some concerns of our original language as we drafted. I think we're getting close to having some language that hopefully Councilmember Nixon feels he could advocate that would allow us to get something introduced at the Senate relatively soon, maybe tomorrow or the next day. So.
Okay. So the remaining priorities that I didn't touch on, there's no real significant updates to those. On the park and ride, city staff continue to meet monthly with staff from WashDOT and Sound Transit. On the funding for law enforcement personnel, the issue is a priority of many different cities and stakeholder groups, and Chief Harris, I understand, will be traveling to Olympia in February with the Sheriffs and Police Association, and perhaps we can get some meetings set up to talk about that with her. On the Cross Kirkland Corridor, staff we're just finishing up the application forms that the House and Senate require, and we'll get those submitted this week. And on the property tax cap issue, the stakeholder group there is being led by the county, the Washington Association of Counties, our consultants, Waypoint Consulting. Mike and Tara Cedar are active members of that group. And the sense is down there in Olympia that progress is being made on the House side, and the Senate is proving a little more challenging, but they are excited or encouraged by some House members that are stepping up to sponsor it. So on your screen right now is the session cutoff. February 17th is the first cutoff for policy bills, so that's the date that we're racing towards right now. Do members have any questions on the updates to the priorities?
Questions or comments for Lori?
All right. So it real just real quickly, I don't have a presentation on the preliminary draft in your packet. It's very long, and I provided all the background information. Things are moving along. There's just real quickly, House Bill 1047 would create a system of safe and secure collection of and disposal of unwanted medication. Senate Bill 5215 is Pierce County's bill to amend the state law to better support and encourage annexation of unincorporated urban areas. This bill dropped today and will be assigned to city staff for review and feedback. And also, Deputy Mayor Arnold forwarded today the Eastside Transportation Partnership's 2017 priorities, so those will be added to the support agenda. That's all I got on this, but I'm willing to take any comments here or following the meeting on a future draft I'll bring back in February.
Your packet was very thorough. Mr. Ashmore.
Just a question. Do we need a motion to adopt the support agenda?
I don't think so. I think the resolution that you... well, actually, I should let the city attorney answer that.
I think we've actually done it both ways in the past. So it's really up to the council if you want to do it.
I haven't had any questions on the support agenda. I would move then to adopt the support agenda as presented.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to adopt the support agenda, legislative agenda, as presented to us by Ms. McKay.
It begins on page 98.
Mr. Arnold.
One question. Does the support agenda as presented include ETP, or would that require an amendment?
There's a placeholder in there for ETP, so
it hasn't been adopted yet. So I think I don't think we could incorporate it before it's adopted by ETP.
It was adopted on Friday.
Ah, okay. Sorry, it was. Okay.
And there's in the draft in your packet, there is a placeholder for ETP's agenda.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Do we need to offer an amendment, or are we okay?
No, that's
we're okay.
We're good.
All right. It was moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet. Well, all those in... I'm sorry. I need a roll call. Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon.
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal.
Yes.
Councilmember Asher.
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet.
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni. Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Yes.
Mayor Wallen.
Yes. Ms. Marchioni? Maybe we didn't need to adopt the support agenda.
Well, we have a majority of the council.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. We do, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. We certainly did.
All right. So let's move on.
You need to announce that it's adopted.
Thank you. The support agenda as presented is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a big 100 days in your future here. Hang in there.
105.
We support you. All right, the next item on our agenda is item 10C, also under unfinished business. It's ordinance 4553 and its summary, relating to land use approval of a preliminary and final PUD as applied for by Larry Scrivenich, Little Lion LLC, in the Planning and Building Department. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So, if you remember at the last council meeting, you closed the closed record hearing and you took the matter under advisement. We don't have a formal presentation today, but the council has the option of continuing to take the matter under advisement, to grant the application, to modify and grant the application, or deny the application. And staff here, David Barnes in particular, our associate planner, is here to answer any questions you might have, as is the rest of the staff.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Pascal.
Thank you, Mayor. Just real quick, at this time, I would like to advise that I'll be recusing myself from any discussion or votes on this matter tonight. I'd also like to affirm that I did not attend or participate in the closed session earlier this evening. So a number of months ago, as a neighborhood leader in our community who has a background in land use regulations, I was contacted by individuals who eventually became challengers in this matter. At that time, much like I've done in other instances, as an informed neighborhood leader, I offered my expertise on how to meaningfully engage in this process with the city. I was acting as a citizen, and of course, without any knowledge that I would be appointed to council several months later. So while I believe I could be fair and impartial on this matter, and while I do not stand or gain or lose from the outcome, in order to avoid even the appearance of any unfairness, I just won't be participating. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Sweet.
Okay, Madam Mayor, I would like to move that we continue to take the matter under advisement until the next City Council meeting on February the 7th, and to reopen the Council's closed record hearing on that date, not to gather new facts or evidence, but for the sole limited purpose of inviting the applicant and the challenger to update the Council on the status of any discussions between the applicant and the challenger related to the challenge, and to share with the Council any perspectives either party may have on the adequacy of public benefits associated with the application.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. It's moved by Councilmember Sweet and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to continue to take this matter under advisement until the next City Council meeting on February 7th. Discussion. Thank you, Mr. Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As I stated when we discussed this last, I would like to see the challengers and the applicant work out a compromise on the impacts that about which concerns have been expressed. Personally, I don't have any concerns about the public benefit, but because I do want to give them more time to work out their differences on the on mitigating the negative impacts, I'm happy to vote yes on this motion.
Thank you. Other comments? Ms. Sweet, then Mr. Arnold.
Okay. Just to put my personal spin on this one as well, hoping that resolution can be reached by the parties, I'm willing to go forward with this. With regard to our earlier discussion, I have not changed my position in terms of the adequacy of public benefits, but I think it is worthy of just having that discussion in order that the Council can then consider our further discussion and take action on the application.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
One of the responsibilities City Council has on this is to balance the public benefit with the adverse impacts of a particular development. It's especially important in this development because under the PUD code, it's offering additional units versus flexibility that we do elsewhere. So I am interested in hearing more perspectives on the adequacy of that public benefit under that standard.
Other comments? Mr. Asher.
I think I expressed somewhat my sentiment that at the when we first heard this matter, that I have serious concerns about the variance that we are taking from our normal codes that we have established through very arduous processes, and I've sat through most of them, as to what we think our community should be and the rules for development, and compare deviations from those plans and those codes to what is being asked, and the benefit that's being returned in for those variances. I have serious doubts as to the adequacy of the balance of those two, or that the benefits outweigh the adverse impacts that we're seeing on our community. So be interesting to see how that plays out.
Thank you. Well, I am also interested in hearing from the applicant on what public benefits are being offered in the context of the proposed PUD as well. So I'm also in support of the motion. So it was moved by Councilmember Sweet and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to continue to take this matter under advisement until the next City Council on February 7th. Could I have the roll, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal? Oh, excuse me. Recused. Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni? Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. That motion passes. I'm wondering if we need a break or if we should proceed to the completion of the meeting here. What do we think? We're good to go?
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah. All right. The next item on our agenda is new business. It's the Public Disclosure Semiannual Report. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Just very quickly before I get there, I forgot there is a fourth option that I was supposed to mention, which is the council also has the option to remand the ordinance back to the hearing examiner to reopen the record and gather additional information on issues as instructed by the council. So
I think that was in the packet.
We'll bring that up again at the next council meeting as well.
Aware of that.
Yeah, we were aware of that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. But so for new business, the next item is our public records semi-annual report. As you know, we're required by the code, public records ordinance, to provide you a report every 6 months on our what's been going on with public records for the previous 6 months. So here to give you that is our city clerk, Kathy Anderson.
Good evening, Council. It's unusual for me to see you from this perspective. So I don't have a lot to say. We put it all in the report. But it is, I am happy to report that the numbers of requests seem to stay fairly steady and in fact dropped by a small amount in categories 3 and 4. So given that, as I've reported, the public disclosure analyst position has been vacant since the beginning of December, it's a relief to me. So, but it has caused our average days to increase because we simply don't have that 40 hours a week position staffed fully. So we have conducted interviews and second interviews last week, and we hope to have a new incumbent in place at the beginning of February. We did add a section to the report sort of addressing these increased timeline factors and some of the strategies, and I think the city manager has a few thoughts to share with you.
Yeah, so just real quickly, wanted to highlight one of the other things that you ask us to do in these reports is tell you whether we think our resources are adequate to do the job that the public expects us to on public records. And we've been able to say with great certainty that they have been adequate for all the last previous presentations. This is the first time where we've actually hedged that a little bit because we've sort of experienced a unique set of circumstances that we think may unfortunately become more the norm rather than the exception. But what we do still can say is that when we have a fully functioning person in place, we are adequate for the records as they come in. What we have discovered, however, is when we have a transition, it's a little challenging for us to keep up, and that's had an impact on our responses. We have supplemented this in a few ways. We brought in some on-call assistants, and we're contracting for some professional hours, and go to the next slide. But we also had the ability to support and supplement our efforts through the litigation reserve because some of these records issues were related to lawsuits. However, there's also benefit to the whole system because we made some investments in technology and other things out of the litigation reserve. So given all these things that are happening, our conclusion was that we may need to come back and ask you for more resources. We don't know yet what those might be, and we're not totally sure we will, but they could look at a variety of things, including maybe simply a dedicated new portion to the litigation reserve. It could be some additional staff time. It may be contracting. There could be other strategies. But while we are certainly maintaining our strong response, we are experiencing a lot more impact on it than we ever have. And so this is the first time we wanted to sort of raise to the council that we're going to take a hard look at this. And we may come back to you with a different recommendation at the next semi-annual report. And happy to answer any questions on that.
Any questions? Mr. Triplett, Mr. Pascal?
I was just going to ask that when you do come back with more information later in the year, that one of the things that I'd like to understand a little bit more is the level of resources that we devote. And that I understand that's in terms of staff, but it's also, like you said, utilizing some funds that you need to at times to address other things. And I think that'd be really important for the public to understand as well, not just for ourselves, but the public to really see how much, you know, we devote to this, to do a good job and to deliver the things that folks expect us to. So that would be helpful for me.
You got it.
Thank you.
Mr. Nixon.
Yeah, a couple of things. First, I know we separated out the police department records requests from the stats. Isn't that correct?
No, that's not.
They're included in there.
Yes, and they conduct 60% of our public records requests. They're primarily Category 2.
Okay. That was what I was looking for, to find out if they were tracking it, but if it's bundled in, that's great. Mm-hmm. My second question has to do with the mandatory training for council members. And as everybody knows, we're supposed to receive training on the Public Records Act and the Open Public Meetings Act within 90 days of taking office.
Yes.
And then every 4 years thereafter.
Yes.
And my question mainly is on the every 4 years. Are you tracking when we've done that and reported it so that we can be reminded when it needs to be repeated?
We are tracking, and there will be something forthcoming within the next month.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
It can't be easy. I mean, staff turnover is difficult in any enterprise, and this is such a particular, you have to be very well trained to know what information to disclose and what not. So yes. I'll be interested to hear what plan you come up with, because staff turnover is a part of life, and this is a hard position to fill, I would think.
This is the third incumbent in 3 years.
As you saw in the report, we did try to address that in a couple ways by upgrading the position. And we're looking less for attorneys now and more for paralegals and similar qualified, so that hopefully we'll get people who will stay longer and we're now more competitive. The previous position was also competitive, but bigger entities continue to take these positions from us.
Right.
So we felt it was important
to
upgrade.
We train them very well.
That's right. We do train them.
Coach them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll have to think creatively around that problem.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your hard work, Kathy.
Thank you.
We know that you're recognized around the state for what you do, and we're very appreciative that you stay here with us. Thank you. So the next item on our agenda is the 2017 Board and Commission interview process. I believe there is a document at your place.
No, that's different.
Is that different?
Yes.
That's the committee assignment.
Yes.
Oh, this is the Board and Commission's interview. So it's Kathy again. City Manager.
Yes.
Yeah, so as you remember, when you changed your council policies quite some time ago, you elected to have a subcommittee do a pre-screening of applicants for boards and commissions, and you agreed to select those positions by lot, and so that's what we're going to do tonight, and then that group will meet and pre-screen. The candidates. So the clerk will be helping with that.
So would council like me to draw the names?
I think Mr. Asher can draw.
I think Kathy's been very lucky for me, so let's go.
Okay. Has Dave ever not been on this subject?
All right. Councilmember Pascal. Councilmember Marchione and Councilmember Arnold, or Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Hey,
congratulations. Excellent. So they'll be working with Ms. Anderson to schedule
So I wanted to share a couple of pieces of information. In your memo, it said that we had our interviews scheduled for March 28th, but there is a conflict with a potential neighborhood meeting, so Amy will be polling for a different date for your interview night. And also, I wanted to let you know that we have 15 seats up, and of those 15 seats, we have 8 to 11 incumbents. So if the council chooses to interview incumbents, you will have potentially 45 interviews if you had three choices for each seat. And if you choose not to, it would reduce the number of interviews by between 24 and 33 interviews. So,
were you looking for direction on that tonight?
No. The council's committee has made a recommendation in the past, and we provide the committee with information from the committee chairs as to the incumbents' work. And so I believe that the committee will, the way that we have it lined out at this point is that we hope that the committee will meet the week of February 21st or just thereafter, and then bring back that recommendation in at the first meeting in March.
Thank you very much. Mr. Asher.
Can you send us out a list of the seats that were that are going to be open?
Yes.
And then those that are eligible for someone to reapply?
Yes.
And separate those two. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So now?
Just one last comment, which is that, as you know, the subcommittee makes a recommendation to the full council, but the full council can't modify that recommendation, and so you can add change names and so forth. So I just want to make sure that was clear on the record, that the subcommittee is not the decision making, the full council is.
All right, the next item on our agenda is item 12. It's 12A, the City Council Regional and Committee Reports. Shall we do the appointments and then the reports?
Sure.
Okay. So you have before you the recommendation of Deputy Mayor Arnold and myself for our City Council committees and our regional committees. I'm wondering, do we need a motion to adopt this? Yes, we do. Okay. Or if we got some amendments?
Yeah, just one note. On the fourth line down, it should be Legislative Work Group. It's not a committee.
Right. Yeah, we should sort of probably break that out.
Because it's also not subject to...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, sir. Mr. Nixon.
Madam Mayor, I move that we adopt the council committee assignments as presented with the amendment to the name of the legislative work group.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to adopt the council committee assignments as presented, with the exception of the naming of the legislative work group. Any discussion?
Just
yes, sir.
I heard a comment that we probably should isolate the legislative work group into another title here, and not have it under the council committees.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? The roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marcioni? Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. The council committee assignments are approved. So, regional and committee reports. Mr. Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, as we all know, we got kind of a quick start this year. There's been a lot of things that have happened already. On January 5th, many of us attended the East King County Chambers of Commerce Legislative Coalition breakfast, and it was surprisingly and refreshingly frank. Assessments of the various issues. My experience in the past has been there's always been a lot of kind of beating around the bush and trying to avoid answering the questions, but it was great this time to have, like I said, very frank assessments of the chances of various things happening in Olympia. On the 9th, I attended a Moss Bay Neighborhood Association meeting, and the city manager did a great job giving an update on housing affordability. Thank you. There was also an update on Kirkland Urban and an update from Kari Page on the Neighborhood Grant Program. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to compliment the Moss Bay Neighborhood Association on the quality of their meetings. I always try to attend my own neighborhood meeting, but the other one that I always try to attend is Moss Bay because they do a great job. On the 11th, we had the first Kirkland Business Roundtable of the year here in the council chambers, and the staff again did a great job on talking about the city's customer service initiative, and there was a great turnout at that event. The evening of the 11th, I represented the council at the Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee meeting, and the notes from that were sent in email. There's really nothing of substance to report. It was mostly updates and discussion. And then the 12th, we heard from the mayor at the Kirkland Chamber of Commerce luncheon on the state of the city, and I'll let her provide further details on that, but she always does a great job on that. And then the 13th, I joined Councilmember Sweet and our Solid Waste Program Manager, John McGilvery, at the MISWAC meeting. It's the Metropolitan Solid Waste Management Advisory Committee, if you put all the words in. It was great fun. I'll let Councilmember Sweet give more details on that, but we talked a lot about the demand management study and Houghton and those sorts of things. So, great start to the year. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal.
Well, I have a lot less to report. I feel less active than Councilmember Nixon, but I did have a chance to attend the Juanita neighborhood meeting last week, which was Monday the 9th, and had a presentation by both Public Works and Planning about what's planned for Totem Lake. There was a lot of interest by the community about just the growth. We've been focusing on how to enable it, and now it's happening. So it was good discussion. Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Regional Transit Committee meets tomorrow, as does the MID Steering Committee. The MID has gone into a steering committee mode that they've not had before, and will lessen the general meetings of the some 40 members of the MID committee, and handle a number of things in the steering committee, and I'm a part of that. I did attend the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods along with Councilmember Pascal last week. It was very well attended. Great interaction. Chief Harris was there and made a great impression. She told folks that she will that we'll see command staff around at neighborhood meetings, and I think that's nothing but a good thing to improve that connection. The one thing I did want to note in particular is the Sound Cities Association orientation will be before our next meeting on, I believe it's February 1st. It's Wednesday, February 1st. And I hope, John, that you're going to try to make it. It's just good for him to see all the various committees and maybe talk to some of the folks. He's missed the chance of being appointed to a committee this year unless an opening comes up. But having that kind of an orientation, and it's a sort of a dinner, yeah. Too, for free. It's worth going down to Burien.
Yeah,
or CTAC.
Do we know where
it's on the calendar?
CTAC?
It's always
CTAC City Hall.
Yeah. Go. You've got to go HOV with someone.
It's a carpool event.
Yeah. No, I've got regional water quality, so I have to go from Seattle to.
You probably get a bus going from there.
Yeah, if you want to drive, I'll come back with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds cool.
Okay,
sounds great.
Yeah.
Ms. Sweet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I attended that legislative breakfast, and I have to echo Mr. Nixon's comments and say that Larry echoes them as well. He says that in 13 years, there has not been a conversation as good as the one that they had, and it really was just wide open, honest, straightforward conversation. I went last week while you were doing your speech. I've missed that 2 years in a row now, to the Economic Development Forecast event in Seattle, where we were, where I was able to accept on our behalf. I can't remember what the name of the award was, but it was, what was the name of the award?
The
Innovation Triangle. It was a big deal. There were 1,000 people in that room. It was John Stokes, myself, and John Marchione was supposed to be there, but Angela Birney stepped in for him. They did a video. It was pretty amazing stuff. The trophy is beautiful. John's got it right now. we'll borrow it from him for a while. It was a very impressive event, and it was incredibly well attended. Mr. Arnold was there in the morning. He got to go to the luncheon. I get to go to the State of the City next year. Anyway, other than that, what did I do?
What was the forecast?
The forecast was absolutely optimistic. Mm-hmm. And I'll let Jay do the particulars, because I had to miss that portion of it. It was the reason I wanted to go. But anyway, I met with Councilmember Balducci twice the following week. I met with her once on Saturday, where we had some really good conversation about Houghton, about the transfer station, about the landfill, about a lot of issues around the county and around the city. And then with Kathy Brown, we did our formal meeting with Claudia on Monday, the following Monday, and sort of had the same discussion. She was very well prepared. But I got to tell you, I was pretty stunned with her level of understanding about the issues and the priorities that we have placed on Houghton. Not just she, but her staff is really on top of that. And I've got to say, I was very impressed. Then we had the Ms. WAC meeting, Ms. Mac. His wild man. Anyway, as you all know, we've been struggling mightily with the demand management study versus, do we do that? Do we invest the $2 million, which the council has already invested? There's still a lot of discussion about whether or not that's the right thing to do, both at the MSWAC and the SWAC level. SWAC has a resolution that they want to make them pull back on the studies. There are a number of cities within the MSWAC group now that also want to just not do it. There's really no option to do that. The council's already written a budget proviso, or three budget provisos, around the demand management study. So, I mean, that train has left the station, and I'm not sure what MSWAC has ended up on now is now we want SCA to weigh in on this. And we did explain that SCA does not weigh in on things that are as controversial as this. Toby said it, so did I. But Mayor, Councilmember Pelosi and Mayor Bernie, what's Bernie's name?
Thomas.
were very adamant about moving on for an SCA process. So it's all in the air, and I'll send you John's notes. They're always wonderful. And finally, along with Deputy Mayor Arnold, I attended Dwayne Lund's memorial last week. I didn't know that much about the man. He was a very impressive, remarkable man, and I'm really glad I went. It was fairly well attended for a Seahawks day. If you want to know what his middle name is, you can check with me. I do know, but I am not going to put it on the air. And finally, just a reminder that the promotion ceremony for the police department is this Friday.
Thursday.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
A couple of observations from the economic development forecast. It was really striking that this was not just about how fast are we growing, how much investments in the community. It really was a discussion of Seattle's the Seattle area is awesome. People recognize it. It's growing. What are the impacts of the growth, and what can we do about it? And a lot of more talk, just not just about the investment, but how do we promote and provide livable communities amidst this growth. I want to share a couple of quotes from there. One was from Skylar Olson, who is Zillow's chief economist. There was a lot of talk about how this area, given the similarities and the competition from areas like the San Francisco Bay Area, how do we learn from the pitfalls of San Francisco Bay Area? Ms. Olson made the observation that change is going to happen. Change is required. Do we lead that, or do we let growth change us? There is no opportunity to have things stay the same. Growth will change us by making housing more expensive, gentrifying our neighborhoods, pricing seniors out of living out of their homes if we don't make other changes. They had an observation that in the last, let me get the time frame right here. I don't have the time frame in my notes on Twitter. I'm assuming this was going to be 2015, that the San Francisco Bay Area created 480,000 private sector jobs, but only 50,000 units of housing. And that's part of where they have run into some of the issues with growth and affordability that we need to avoid. Finally, in talking about some of the alternatives, there was a quote that somebody said, we need a lot more YIMBYs, people that find a way to say yes in my backyard, than NIMBYs. And I think that's going to be the conversations we're going to be having moving forward. Secondly, on the D.V. Hurst Memorial, I had hoped to be able to, having some services, the opportunity to share some thoughts on behalf of the city, but given the scope of the Man's Good Works in the community at Northwest University in the city, it was a 2.5-hour service that we were at there. There was not the opportunity besides the prepared program to do that. But it was very impressive to hear not only about Mayor Deavy's good works and what he did, but how he did them. And that was really special to hear those stories. Thank you.
Ms. Sweet.
It was. To know that these folks preceded us and have done such good work already, it really is amazing. And that's why I raised the question to the mayor. Do we have or should we have? I know I've been at a memorial before for a council person. I can't remember who it is, but for somebody who had served on the council. There were a few of us in the audience, but nobody said anything. And I wonder if we need to have some kind of a protocol to make sure that we either send an acknowledgement, like there was they read a number of tributes. But it seems to me that we as a city, when something like this monumentous happens to one of our own, if you will, who served up here, we need to do something formal to acknowledge their service. So I don't know
After I got your email, I did ask for a letter to be prepared for his family, but I think you're right. It needs to go in advance of a service so that they have it to read at the service. So we should talk about that.
And then I have one piece of business.
Yes.
On January 9th, the Planning and Economic Development Committee had a presentation from the Kirkland Arts Center. Mm-hmm. You heard a little summary from Seth during citizen comment. And this is the issue that I've mentioned during previous budget discussions about the Arts Center's work on improving seismic safety in the historic Peter Kirk building. We weren't ready during the budget discussion to have particulars, but the Art Center has come back with a detailed plan on the need and how they would go about solving the issue. The Planning and Economic Development Committee reviewed these materials and is recommending that the council fund $50,000 from council contingency for seismic retrofits at the Kirkland Arts Center in the Peter Kirk building. We believe that given the plan that they have put in place, that this money will be leveraged to cover a project that is over $1 million in full scope. So is council willing to support a request that staff bring back a report on this item for discussion at a future council meeting?
For discussion. Yeah.
Mr. Nixon?
Yeah, thanks. I would also ask that the staff report include a discussion, however brief, of the issues surrounding the gift of public funds issue, since it's hard to make the case that this is for the upkeep of the poor and needy, and otherwise you have a constitutional restriction on gift on use of public funds. So.
And I would like to know that our staff have looked at this proposal and the contractor, you know, before we invest public money, that we're satisfied that this is good work, that we've got the bids, that, you know, a good process has gone behind it. But absolutely, in principle, I'm very supportive.
Got it.
Thank you. Well, the great news about the State of the City is that we're doing another one, and Mr. Triplett's going to make it into the speech and then a presentation about the work plan at the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods. It is yet to be scheduled, but it is going to be scheduled very soon.
Okay.
So we get another chance to hear about that. City Manager.
Okay, so a couple quick things. The main item under my report is the final retreat agenda, which is actually, interestingly enough, page 200 of 200, so I get to talk about the final page.
Just so, got in under the wire.
So we had the discussion at the last council meeting. We made two additional additions to potential work program items. The council can certainly add more at the retreat, but we added one that Councilmember Pascal suggested relating to Sound Transit and WashDOT along I-405, and making sure we're going to adequately partner with them to ensure we get service. And then one suggested by Councilmember Sweet related to the future of the Houghton Transfer Station and landfill and engaging both King County and the Kirkland community. There isn't any other major changes. We're still proposing to have the council discussion session, the council potpourri session, where other topics will be brought up. But I want to see if there are any other final changes or comments on the agenda, and otherwise we'll finalize it and
move forward. Mr. Nixon.
Well, the one question I have is on the limit of five topics.
That was just what I was going to clarify. So the limit, it's not a limit exactly. So the idea was that you would pick five to go to the work plan, that would make it to the work plan level. So there's no limit on what would be sent to committee or white papers or that
so
kind
five
of thing. Like what would you would like to see on the work plan next year?
Okay, got it. And so Mike, what I was going to propose is putting it out on paper so that we can still save time by just referring to numbers. But because I have, as usual, about two dozen different little things.
No problem.
This is where we call on the expertise of Ms.
Certainly, if anyone wants to give us a list of potential topics, you know, we'd be happy as staff to get a copy and pass them out to everybody.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet.
Can we also take a look at last year's list?
Yes. We have a list of all the previous
The previous ones.
Yes.
You got a copy of that? So I ask the city manager to provide that to...
We will make sure, yeah, we'll get that to
Okay.
It's an impressive list.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
One question, if I might. The where is it? The Houghton landfill... and the Houghton Transfer Station, what do we expect to be discussing? Our position, what we want, or...
We've already begun some discussions with individual council members with regard to the transfer plan and this kind of stuff. But what I've been asking for is just an evaluation of what our opportunities might be. If we were to remember the $2 million that
if we get what
Balducci,
we
add,
what we okay
right
all right, all right gotcha.
When I talked to Councilmember Balducci, we talked specifically about Houghton as a potential site for a regional aquatic center.
Yeah, I
recognizing the mining costs and all the rest of it. But
when I first looked at that, I said, "Are we going to revisit our position on the closure, and so that was where I was stuck.
I would suggest if we ever were to revisit our position on the closure, that it would be probably not be that discussion.
And that's where I was thinking. So
I mean, if say
that was my concern.
Yeah, if say solid waste were to come back and say, all right, if you would be willing to reconsider a transfer station and we did something to redirect traffic or did all this other stuff and we put in a state-of-the-art facility and we gave you a whole bunch of other stuff too, would you consider it? Then I think we would potentially take that back to the neighborhoods, take look at, you know, a benefit analysis of what that would give us.
Okay. Yeah, Santa Claus came. Okay. All right. Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. I think we're finished with the retreat agenda. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. Thank you. So one other quick note. Councilmember Belducci mentioned this, but I wanted to actually give some credit to our staff in Public Works, because when the alternative program came out for alternative transit, I forwarded to them and said, is there any possibility to create something with the Lake Washington Institute of Technology? And so Joel Funt and Stephen Padua actually rolled up their sleeves, immediately met with Lake Washington staff, and actually drafted the entire grant program on behalf of the Lake Washington Institute of Technology and submitted it. And out of all the programs, we are one of the ones that moved forward. So it was actually some pretty crackerjack work by the Kirkland team that got that done. So I wanted to acknowledge them. But what we're looking at is potentially providing shuttle service from the Lake Washington Institute of Technology down to the transit centers at Evergreen Health and the Kingsgate Park and Ride. So having something that just goes back and forth so they're linked to the 255 and the other service there, and so we don't have to get new buses to the college. We might be able to get the college people to the buses. So that's the concept. So
that's excellent work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to see if there are any other calendar updates that the council had for future agendas.
AWC is in February this year. It'll be when I think we'll have to reschedule public safety.
Hmm.
But I'm wondering who all's going. Do we know? Okay, great.
I think I am not going.
The morning of the first day I have a conflict, but the afternoon of the first day and the second day I'll be there.
Got it.
Now, they're looking at potential second AWC day later on in the session.
Didn't know that.
I caught some wind of something like that. Do it each special session.
Yeah.
Well, maybe so.
Settling in.
Okay, that's all I have if there's no other items.
Right. It is before 10 p.m., but we do not have an audience, so I...
Maybe the staff
would staff?
Like to. Would anyone like to address the council at this time?
Don't take it seriously.
All right. Thank you very much for being here. We appreciate all of you. Have a good evening. We're adjourned.
Oh,
no, we're not. Excuse me.
We're having an executive session.
Oh, that's right.
That's by... I apologize.
We are going to convene an executive session to discuss potential litigation, and we will return at...
Return just to adjourn.
Just to adjourn.
At what time?
At approximately 10:15.
The mayor will return.
I'll be back at 10:15.
The mayor will return.
I'll be back at 10:15.